Friday edition of One Bills Live, Steve Tasker along with John Murphy.
There's some new rules changes on the horizon in the NFL. What rules need to be added, subtracted, or just changed in the NFL? We want to hear from you.
Also at 1 o'clock, we're going to talk to NFL Network's analyst Steve Weiss. He's going to tell us why you shouldn't overlook A.J. McCarron.
League owners getting ready to meet in Atlanta. They're going to talk about the kickoff rule. They're going to talk about player ejections and a lot more. We'll hear from Judy Batista of NFL.com to set the agenda for next week's meeting.
One Bills Live starts now.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker.
Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
Here comes the show, the final show of the week. Good afternoon. Welcome to New Era Field in our One Buffalo studio in the front end of the AdPro Sports Training Center. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Here for our show. It is One Bills Live.
I'm getting that one last text in before we start the show. You know, you got everybody.
You want me to cover for you?
Everything crashes in on you when you're trying to get this done, and then all right, here we go. Awesome.
Are you sufficiently caffeinated? Because this is another cup of coffee you're working here. No, I don't. I'm not keeping score, but I think
I can get through this first segment.
This your third of the day?
Well, if you count the 32 ouncer that I drank as one, yes,
that's what I saw.
Second. Yeah.
So. Did you drink coffee like this before you became a regular working?
No,
guy?
Actually, no.
Yeah, what's going on?
I'm worried. I'm kind of liking the hot coffee. The coffee. It's hitting me right in the spot.
Does this account for some of your outlandish predictions when it comes to the Bills? Do you think?
coffee's almost as good as the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, Steve was chugging Kool-Aid like out of a fire hose yesterday.
We get these
chugging
guys in
Kool-Aid.
Here. Yesterday we had Matt Milano in, and we had Lorenzo Alexander in. We had Sean McDermott in early in the week. We had all these, these great guys. And then last week, last Friday we talked to Josh Allen, talked to Wyatt Teller, talked to Tremaine Edmonds. So I'm like talking to these guys.
Yeah.
all of a sudden it's like flipping a switch. I'm like jacked up, man. I am so
Save
excited.
It, man. We're still months away from
I know.
The season.
I know.
4 months away from the season.
I don't know how fans used to do this. Just wait.
we wait.
Oh, my God. You just wait.
Another day of waiting today, but it should be a good wait. 3-hour show and a couple of good guests today. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Steve Weiss, one of the most respected NFL reporters, works for NFL Network, a little bit for NFL.com. Steve Weiss will join us. He's written a variety of things lately about a variety of NFL topics. He likes A.J. McCarron. He says, don't go to sleep on A.J. McCarron.
Yeah, we've been talking so much about Josh Allen, and everybody's like, okay, A.J. And A.J. McCarron is like, okay, he's the guy who's probably going to start day one, all this stuff we say about him. And we never really got a chance to hear what anybody else thought about him. And then you hear some of the national media coming in, and they chime in and say, hey, the Bills quarterback situation's a mess. They got a rookie quarterback. They got A.J. McCarron and Nate Peterman, the 5-interception guy. They're a mess. Not so much. I think there's a little bit more out there about A.J. McCarron than you might hope for. We went back and looked at his statistics when he did get in 2015 for the Bengals. His numbers are pretty good.
Some of them are pretty good.
Some of them are pretty good. So we're going to hear from Steve Weiss, NFL Network, about him and his opinion.
He's coming up with us at 1 o'clock. At 2 o'clock, another highly respected reporter, Judy Batista, works for NFL Network, writes a lot for NFL.com. She's getting set to go to Atlanta Tuesday for the NFL owners' meetings, at which time the owners are expected to approve the changes in the kickoff rule. Judy's going to talk to us a little bit about that, some of the other rules changes talked about by the NFL owners. Judy made a point of telling our producer, hey, tell Steve Tasker I got questions for him about the kickoff rule. You've become a resource for people because you went to those meetings a couple weeks ago.
Well, it was interesting to hear it, and I think that the thing I brought out of it, forget all the specific things, there were some things we spoke about in that meeting that are not part of these rules changes, which kind of felt like they were going to be at the end of the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they met further about it, and they said, they probably came up with some reasons, which I'm not privy to, about why they don't want to do it. One of them was, they were going to give the return team a signal that could, literally blow the thing dead.
Yes, right.
And you've all seen it if you watch the game, and Murph's doing it now. You put your arms out like they call it the Iron Cross, where you make fists with both hands, straighten your arms, and put them right straight out to your sides like a T. And that was going to be a legal signal, much like a fair catch on a punt. And that's not part of the rule changes. So maybe they'll still add that in there or whatever. But if you did that as a returner, the thought was that it was going to – wherever the next thing the ball touched, if it was the end zone, it was a touchback. It was a returner, it was a touchback. If it didn't reach the end zone and landed in the field of play, ball was dead where it landed. So it's first and 10 on the three, the two. That was something that was talked about as they were going to say, yeah, I think that's a good idea. And it's going to be up to the return man not to give that iron cross too early. I think some of it might have been that that what do you do if they bloop kick it? Well, then the guy can give that iron cross signal and call the play dead right there, and then it's a good thing, and you don't get the chance for the turnover by the kicking team. So I think that's probably one reason they pumped the brakes on that. But the rest of it, that's what they were talking about.
I had breakfast this morning with my friend Paul Peck, who does UB football, and Bill Wilson, longtime college football official. We were talking about some of these things, believe it or not. One of the things they talked about was in college football, it's a rule change this year. Apparently, if a kickoff drops inside the 20, 25-yard line, I forget which, and if you signal fair catch, you get the ball at the 25. From the goal line to the 20-yard line, you can signal fair catch and automatically get the ball.
But if you catch it at the 23, you're going to try to roll the dice and go.
But if you catch it at the 2, why would you give him those 23 yards?
To keep teams from returning it.
Yeah, I know. I think it's a bad rule. Is my point.
I agree.
It's cheap. It's cheapening the yardage out there. At any rate,
listen. Here's the thing. I think they're going to need to go the other. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Finish.
I think they need to go the other way. Make it so tough on the coverage team that the returns can come out. They can start making more returns. And if you do that, the only way to do that is to make it safer because there won't be the big collisions. They'll have to start running side by side with the guys they're blocking rather than that. And it'll bring the return game back into the game instead of tossing it out. And if you can make the – and you can't – I mean, it's another play, no question, so it'll have some inherent risk. But it won't be the train wrecks that I lived through for 13 years.
2 weeks ago, you came back from those meetings. You were invited to be at the league meetings to talk about the future of kickoffs.
Working hard, too, and getting accused of having a day off.
Lorenzo, I told these guys this morning – this stuck with me. You were talking about touchbacks, how, they blow the play dead. Most of us think play over, nothing's going to happen. But the evidence shows
not always.
Guys are getting hurt. There's some big light-up hits, right?
In fact, that's what the league was really upset at. You got guys like Lorenzo, and me too. I know exactly what they're saying. You go down there, and they're not going to blow it dead until the guy picks it up, stops it, and downs it. So the ball's bouncing around, or the guy catches it and maybe starts to run out or thinks about it and kind of gives a look-see. Or even if the whistle blows dead at that moment, guys are still coming down hard, running down the field hard. And if they think or get an idea because the coverage team, me as a coverage guy coming down, you're looking at the play. It's right in front of you. You don't have to turn your head or turn around or whatever. You can see that, that's going out of bounds or that's going to be out. It's going to be blown dead. So you don't have to worry about the returner. You can go find somebody and light them up.
Right. And that's what I'm telling these guys. Well, I'm telling these guys, Lorenzo, who I think the world of, think he's a great player and not a dirty player at all, but he admitted, I'm looking for somebody to light up in those situations. Yeah. Absolutely. For the next time, so he knows I'm
exactly.
out there.
Exactly. So
I never thought of that until Lorenzo said that.
It's laying groundwork for a confrontation later in the game because you have to – you know that at some point you're going to be physically confronted with this guy or some other guy.
Yeah.
And you want to give them something to think about. And by that, I mean, I don't mean a reason for them to hit you back because they're angry. But knowing that you're ready to do that and you come in there and you're going to do, here it comes again. And then you have to brace for that, right? Then you don't do it. You run by him because he's planting his feet trying to take you on. And then he's frozen his feet.
Slow down.
I tell guys, when guys ask me how I covered kicks, it was all about staying on your feet, but you got to keep moving. Always keep running because as soon as you stop, everybody on the field is moving faster than you, including the goalpost. Everything moves faster than you when you're stopped. Yeah, you're standing still. When you stop moving and try to take people on, you have to be sure you're doing the right thing, because particularly as a coverage guy. When you stop running, you stop being a football player, and that's why if you can get the guy to do that by setting him up with a hit, you set him up later on for becoming like a goalpost. He's a rock out there standing in the middle of things, and everybody's running around him.
So what we're talking about here is the kickoff rules changes. Judy Batista from NFL.com will join us at 2 o'clock to talk about that. And on the topic of rules changes, that's kind of where we want to launch our discussion with you today. On Twitter, we've got a question. It's not a poll, just a question. You can answer the poll on Twitter, but we'd love to hear your voice. As usual, the phone line's open, 803-0550, and toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Rules changes expected to be approved next week. The owners' meeting next Monday and Tuesday in Atlanta. Question, which rule in the NFL needs to be changed? Which rule do they need to add? Which rule do they need to take away? And give us a reason why. That's why I need to call 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550.
This is
your chance. A rules change. You got something in mind? What should they change? What should they add? What should they take away from the rule book? Give us a call or tweet us in your ideas.
And I think some of the times, you know, we always make fun of Twitter. We refer to it, you know, some tweets on anything. But, you know, anybody who's on Twitter knows it's there's a little bit of bile in Twitter. I mean, it's some pretty raucous stuff that you have to sift through. But also, we've gotten a lot of really good tweets for some pretty thoughtful people. So I'm kind of interested. And this is one of the few. That's the only one, only Twitter poll we've had since I've been on the show that didn't have like A, B, C, or D.
This
you know,
one?
Choices.
Today?
Yeah, because we always have, you know, like yesterday.
Yeah.
Are they going to get top 10, middle
right.
10, or top whatever? This is the only one where people have to, if you want to answer it, you got to give us an example. You got to put your mind to it. So this is, I'll be interested to see
we
how
like
this
throwing the multiple choices out there. Especially the one that says other. Yeah. Some people get offended when we say other. That's I just want to open it up.
I get you. Some people don't agree with any of the choices.
Yeah, so you put other.
Yeah.
At any rate, on our tweet sheet, and you can call us up and let us know what you think of this. Rules changes. What would you suggest? What should be eliminated? What should be added? What should be changed? Tweet sheet from Minicamp Jack. Can we just have one clear, simple clarification as to what a stinking catch is? Possession. Two feet down in a move, whether it's going to the ground or running, et cetera. Keep it simple. If it looks like a catch, guy has possession, 2 feet in bounds, and the ball doesn't hit ground, it's a catch. Well, Jack, you know this, I assume. They have changed it now. They've tried to simplify the catch rule this year. Already been approved. The requirement to survive the ground has been eliminated this year, so there's no more, you know, counterintuitive you see something, you think, well, of course that's a catch, and it's not. So survive the ground is not a question anymore. They're talking about establishing inbounds, controlling the ball, and performing a football move, right? We went through this a couple months ago,
right.
Whether it's reaching for a first down, running for a first down. Those are the – now, whether or not it's enforced that way, that's a different story. But they have tried – it looks to me like they've tried to simplify what constitutes a catch in an effort to do it exactly what you want, a clear, simple clarification on what a, as you put it, stinking catch is.
Yeah, and that's right. But we said this when they brought this up and they were looking at it. I said, listen, it doesn't matter how you're going to write this, and this goes to Minicamp Jack and all that. It doesn't matter how you write it because in the NFL, we've all seen it. They write this rule, and then something happens. It's like, it's so close. And by the letter of the rule, you're going to say, hey, that was a catch, or that was not a catch, and you think it should have been, or you think it shouldn't have been. No matter how you write this rule, we're all going to see it in the NFL where it's not going to be a catch, or it is going to be a catch, and all of us agree that it should have been the other option. And it's just –
well,
you know, because it happens.
Well, you can anticipate, and in the case of a catch, the dispute will come on, did he attempt or perform, in fact, a football move? Did he run with the ball? Did he try to extend to the first down line? They call it a football move, and did he do that will be the standard. Now, that could be, you know, interpreted differently by different people, including officials.
Well, the big thing is that when the guy's got it, control of it, got 2 feet down, and he goes to the ground, and the ball moves in his hand because the ground caused it. Well, to me, that's a catch and down because the ground can't cause a fumble. And that's the way it should have been 10 years ago, and it wasn't. And now they've kind of changed it to that. And you know, so that's, yeah, obviously, that's we're going to get a lot about that. I didn't think about it, but we're going to get a lot about the catch rule, I'm sure. But
there is a new standard, and it's control of the ball, 2 feet down or another body part, and a football move, for example, a third step, reaching, extending for the line to gain, or the ability to perform such an act. That's where I think you run into trouble.
That seems to me a big gray area.
He didn't reach or extend for the line to gain, but he could have. He had the ability to do that. Well, that's a lot of interpretation there. I can see that being a problem.
I'm telling you, it's going to happen, and it's going to happen more than once. We also got another tweet from Patrick Mack. Pass interference should be reviewable or a 15-yard max. And that's an interesting point because a lot of people, you know, my partner here, Murph, thinks instant replay should be completely thrown out of the game. I get it. But then you look at a guy like, well, Bill Belichick, every year at the owners' meeting when they talk about this, he says, listen, let's make everything reviewable. Every judgment call, every play, everything. Because then in certain instances, things that aren't reviewable are the ones that you're really critical to the game. And then other times, one that's not reviewable or an innocuous play becomes critical to the game, and you can't review it because it's either a judgment call or whatever. The problem with this is this, and I know this because it happens in the Canadian Football League. They use this rule. You can challenge any play on the field at any time, not just when a flag's thrown. You can challenge any play on the field at any time. So let me just give you one little drop in the pond and start the ripple effect in what you're talking about. Big play. So coaches up in Canada, they save their challenges.
How many do you get?
I think you may get them until you don't get one right. I'm not sure about that. That's a good question. But here's the thing. Here's the ripple effect. You save it till the third quarter. You don't want to get stuck with it, so you don't want to wait till the fourth quarter because you might not get a chance. Third quarter, game's still in doubt. And your opponent hits a big play down the far sideline, but you're watching over here on the right sideline, and their guy had an illegal contact on the right side. So you challenge that play, and you tell them where you're looking, and you have to tell them that. You say, listen, here's where the penalty was. They'll go back, review it, and if there certainly was an offensive penalty before during the play, when they got the big play down the sideline, you can say, hey, he's right. They had a penalty. It comes back. The big play is wiped away on a no call because your team saw them have a penalty.
What if the penalty doesn't have a material effect on the
doesn't
big play?
Matter. Like, penalty's a penalty.
Illegal hands to the face on penalty, the opposite
that's
side
right.
of the
That's exactly
line.
What you can talk about. I mean, you can have like a defensive holding where a defensive lineman pulls a guard away from the defensive end. The defensive end gets a shot in. And then the guy still gets rid of the ball. It turns into a big play or whatever, or it gets intercepted. The offense can come back and say, it's defensive holding on 93 on the defensive
that
line.
And they
come
right back. Doesn't seem right to me, Steve.
They bring it back.
It doesn't seem right. I don't know if I'd like that.
Well, that's just a point. That's the way it is up there. And that's why they haven't done it here in the States, because you can cherry pick where you challenge now because it's a no-call league. And you think about it, they say holding happens on every play on the offensive line. You're going to have to – that'll come back to haunt
yeah.
you if you instill that
You'll
rule. They'll just say, hey, you got a big play against us? Nope, your offensive tackle was holding. Look at it.
Patrick Mack's other point, a 15-yard max on penalty on a pass interference call, defensive pass interference call. That was discussed again this year. They elected not to put it into play. I'm still on the fence about that one. I get it, the long pass, the deep pass. Wouldn't it incentivize defenders to immediately interfere, right? If it's going to be a 40-yard completion potentially, why wouldn't you
well,
do
yeah,
and give
think
up
about this
yards?
What if it yeah and if it's a 15-yard max, what if it's third and 20 and you get the penalty and you still don't get a first down? It's got to be an automatic first down as well.
You
get penalized on a play when you could have gotten a first down and the defense still gets the ball back. You got to punt it away. There's the unintended consequences. It's that phrase that they use so much at the meetings I attended in New York a couple of weeks ago. It's a rabbit hole that's hard to find the end of when you start talking about rule changes.
Another from the tweet sheet, which comes from on that same topic, from Greg Torlone, who says defensive pass interference should be 15 yards. He goes on to say a penalty spanning half the field or more shouldn't exist unless the receiver is deemed to have a clear path to the end zone. The NHL has penalty shots. NBA has clear path fouls. This feels like a decent compromise for both sides of the argument. I'd listen to that. I would listen to that. If a receiver's got a clear path to the end zone and he is interfered with, then maybe you'd make the spot foul and not the 15 yards. I think that's a solution.
Yeah,
no?
That's a good point. Yeah, you can. But, man, oh, man, does that seem complicated to me. That seems really difficult to officiate. But even if the rule makes sense, that doesn't mean that, it's going to be easy to implement. But, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Like a penalty shot or, a clear path to the end zone.
Yeah, they call penalty shots when a guy's skating in on a breakaway, right, and somebody throws their stick at him.
I'm trying to get the gears in my mind to mesh right now to figure out what that would look like. And I guess that doesn't seem wrong. And – seems like a good – there's no question that those 45-yard pass interference penalties, that's too much.
Yeah.
You got to figure out how to get that. Maybe it's just 5 yards in the first down.
Well, they're often game changers.
Yeah.
Right? That's the problem. A big pass interference penalty like that is a
game changer.
Particularly
at the end of a close game.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's talk about it. The phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What penalties, as the owners get set to meet in Atlanta the next week, Monday and Tuesday, going to change some rules? If you were there, what penalties would you like to see eliminated? What penalties would you like to see added to the rule book? What would you like to see changed? Give us a call at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550.
All right, so also, now that we got you thinking about what rules you don't like in the NFL and what ones you'd change or add, we got another thing. A couple of weeks ago, the Kentucky Derby happened, and you were all over, I got to admit. I mean, like...
What, the hitting the trifecta all
yeah.
over?
Yeah. Again, I confess. You got to be all over it.
So the Preakness, I back into it.
The Preakness is down tomorrow.
Yes.
Okay.
You want me to talk about it for a minute?
Well, we're going to at some point in the show. I know that.
Yeah.
So
I'll talk about it now. I don't have much to say. It's a different race. I haven't done all my homework on it yet. What are you laughing? No, it's totally.
No, it's a horse race, bro.
No, it's a totally different race to handicap, I believe, this year. Because in the Derby, you had really quality horses. I mean, I told you there were 8 horses in the Derby field that to me looked like they had a chance to win. Not so much this race.
Not so much quality horses?
Right.
Well, so why isn't Justified like far and away the favorite?
It is.
He's going to come in. He's going to – well,
it's going to
win. Why would you bet anything but the winner?
Because you want to make some money. The winner is 1-2 odds right now. It might even be lower than
that. So you can double your money.
No. You can bet $2 and get $2.10 back. Something like that.
Yeah, that's doubling your money, bro.
Yeah. Not much fun. It's not. So what you want to do is come up with exotic bets. I'm not, you know.
If you're a radio host and you're betting $2, yeah, I can see it's not that much fun.
It's not. It's not. I mean.
You're not.
Nobody wants
You're not betting $2.
You want value for your dollars. You want value.
Doubling your money's value.
Yeah, no. They get 210 back.
That's why gamblers are degenerates.
No, you want value for your bet.
Doubling your money on a bet is value.
No, it's not much fun. Do you want the big hit?
You're talking about what about like an 8-5 bet? Then you're not getting value for your money, right?
Yeah, you are. Yeah, it's better than 1-2. Yeah. Listen, just sit tight for a second, Mr. Caffeine. Relax. You need value, so you need to find some exotic type bets, exactas and trifectas, such as the one that some people hit a couple of weeks ago, to really make money. I mean, I told you I bet $65 on the Derby, and $2 trifecta bet, I got like $265 back. So that was good value. At any rate, the Parcells horse, right?
Good Magic.
Good Magic is the second choice.
We got a tip. Yeah, we had a tip from Parcells during the week. He said he bet on Good Magic.
Yes, that horse is in the field, has a chance to win, but I Justify is the odds-on favorite. And the other one is a horse who was not in the Derby that I like a little bit, Quip, the one horse, I believe. It's the one horse tomorrow. I would do something with those three horses. Justify is the odds-on favorite for a reason. See, we could be looking at a Triple Crown winner here. Justify running in that slop at the Derby 2 weeks ago, running as well as it did, fighting off Good Magic's charge at the end there. That was an impressive performance. That was a Triple Crown-looking performance by Justify 2 weeks ago. Might do it again tomorrow in the Preakness Stakes, although there's a forecast of a little bit of rain. Track expected to be a little muddy or maybe even sloppy. But I would look at those three horses. Justify most likely going to win. Okay, you writing this down? Come on.
No.
Write it down. Pay attention.
I'm not going to bet.
Quip, I think, has a chance to finish with something here. And I think you can't ignore Good Magic because of its very strong Derby. Now, again, as I said, and you laughed, it's a different race than the Derby. There were 6 to 8 horses in the Derby who had a bona fide chance to win.
Right.
I don't believe that's the case in tomorrow's race. I think I'd be surprised if Justify did anything but win tomorrow. But you can put them together with a couple other horses and maybe get some value. You didn't write any of this down. Why did you ask if you're not?
I'm not like the viewers. I'm calling you if I want to bet on this thing. I'm gonna say, Murph, give me something, and you'll do it. I don't have to write this down.
I think about these things, and I got more homework to do. Also,
I don't want to do. I don't want it now. I want it when you do your homework.
Call me tomorrow.
I'm not gonna call you
tomorrow at 11 a.m.
I'm not gonna want it 3 days in advance, and then you know your horse comes up lame.
And that's the other interesting thing about Justify.
No.
There's a little
Don't
problem.
Start on that.
Let's take a few calls on what we're talking about. on rules changes. What do you think? Tom calling from, where are you calling from, Tom?
Yeah, from Marilla.
Marilla, okay.
Awesome.
What do you got, Tom?
Go ahead, Tom.
What rules change do you like?
Rules changes, what do you think?
Well, you got to talk to us, Tom.
Tom, turn the radio down.
I'm a longtime Bills fan from back in the Brickyard, you know, old Offerman Stadium. You know, the NFL came up with a rule of no stick'em for the receivers.
That's right.
You know, now they got these gloves. You know, the gloves that they use make a lot of these catches unrealistic, in my opinion. I think if you want to improve the catch rule, also improve the rule and, you know, no using these gloves.
No gloves. Hmm. What do you think of that, Steve? Former receiver Steve Tasker. Did you was stick'em allowed when you played?
No.
Okay.
Did you always wear gloves? I don't like Tom from Marilla very much.
Did you always wear gloves?
Yeah.
And is it an unfair advantage?
Listen. Let's let you catch a ball from Jim Kelly, and it feels like a cheese grater when you catch it. I mean, the laces will just tear your hands up. You can't even – I mean, it was a different world. I mean, that's why now you got guys spearing it, catching hands and stuff with them. You take gloves away and all that, you will have guys – you will never see a hand catch anymore unless it's a soft touch out of the backfield.
Really?
Can you talk? Are you telling me I'm going to go out and catch a pass from Josh Allen or Cam Newton, you know, or like we said, John Elway? It is like catching a spinning cheese grater. I am telling you. And you want? I mean, you're catching that thing off the plastic on your pads as much as you can, and you just can't attack the ball as a receiver. So. Yeah, I mean, it would dumb the game down a little bit, no question about it. You'd have the windows would get even smaller for these quarterbacks. It'd be harder and harder to even find a guy who could fit it in there. I think that's one thing that has really helped the league. It's a throwing league. Guys want to throw it. Fans want to see them throw it. And you can't do that if guys cannot catch it and they can't reach out away from their body and catch it. And gloves allow you to do that.
That being said, Tom, thanks for calling. Thanks for thinking outside the box a little bit, right? That's the kind of thing we want to hear today.
That's exactly what we want to hear. I don't dislike Tom. I think he's a good dude. I'm just saying that's a guy who's never had his skin shaved off his palms.
We want to hear that, though. What do you think? Think outside the box. What rules changes would you like to see implemented in the NFL? Give us a call.
It was during my career that gloves really did kind of jump on the scene, and they got better and better and better and better, you know. I think it's a great improvement for the game. Guys could catch it a lot better. They could reach out and spear it one hand. And I know a lot of people think that's so awesome. Listen, it's the gloves. The gloves really do help you. So, that's the kind of rule changes that go a little deeper. And the ripple effects with that would be interesting to see. But I do think it would be one of the less innocuous changes that wouldn't bother fans at the beginning. But you'd have a lot of drop balls, and you'd have guys trying to get up, jump high to cradle it in their chest instead of just reaching up, spearing it, and getting more run after the catch. So it would change the game. And I think Tom from Marilla who called in, it would change the game a lot.
Yeah.
I think it would really change the way the game appears on your screen.
How does Nick O'Leary go out there and do it without gloves?
Listen, I don't know. he's got hands the size of this laptop that's sitting in front of me. You know,
that helps.
That's one thing.
Yeah.
That does help.
All right. That's what we're looking for, though. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. What rules changes would you like to see implemented in the National Football League? The owners are meeting next week in Atlanta to talk about rules changes. You can do it on Twitter at One Bills Live. But give us a call so we can discuss. 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-552-550. It's a Friday. Just getting rolling here at One Bills Drive with One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Friday version of One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. New Era Field next door. We're inside the Ed Pro Sports Training Center on a pretty nice day here in Orchard Park. See, we got the call a minute ago from, was it Joe in Marilla?
Yes.
About gloves. And Baron Von Strongtake tweets this in. Nice. Nice.
You're like Baron Von Strongtake.
It's a good, I didn't read the name until now. It's a pretty good tweet.
Well, let's hear it.
But he kind of by putting his name on a Baron von Strongtail, you're like, well, I can't read this, but I will. I think he was referring to Joe Morello. I think he was referring not to any glove, but the new gloves that adhere to the ball better than already banned stick'em. Let wide receivers protect hands, but don't give unfair advantage. What do you think?
Listen, there's always going to be – listen, they got the gloves they got because they were always looking to improve. And it's going to go the other – and here's the reason. They outlawed stick'em because the guys were using so much stick'em, but the balls were becoming unplayable because they had so much goo on them. So – They changed it, and you can't use it anymore. So these companies came out with these gloves, and now they're getting better and better. And there's nothing on the glove. There's no foreign substance on it. It's just the way the glove is put together that lets you grab it with, you know, two fingers or your thumb and two fingers, and you can grab it and kind of shake it and catch it. It's better. So, yeah, I mean, I get that, but I think that's a step backward for the game, not a step forward. And, you know, I appreciate what they're saying, and it's a well thought out scheme, you know, to do that. Because you talked to me about Nick O'Leary. Nick cradles the ball when he catches it. Once in a while, he'll reach up and spear it. But I'm telling you what, when that ball zips in there, and you need some velocity on it, it hurts. It hurts, and maybe I've got soft hands. I don't know, but you know. That used to be a huge complaint, and you could see immediately almost when the league changed over and let guys start wearing gloves, they could attack the football in tight spots. They could go up and get it.
Well, I think, you know, Joe's call and his proposal to eliminate gloves, I don't understand why that is offensive or what, you know, what you're talking about is the effect of the rule would be fewer catches, right? Fewer spectacular hand catches, really. How is that a better game?
I agree. I think it dumbs it down.
Yeah.
And there's another good rule change, and you talk about the gloves. Chris Rolick tweets in, I'd like to see teams have a chance at an extra point attempt or a two-point conversion after a safety. This would stop teams from purposely taking a safety when backed up in their own end zone because now the other team would have a chance to tie the game or add points to their total. And that's a good point. I mean, when a team actually takes a safety, like at the end of a game or whatever, because they're up by four, and or whatever, five, and they take a safety to go up by or and to go down by up by three to run the clock out or whatever, the other team would get an automatic chance to tack on a point or 2 points with a 2-point conversion. So it would take the automatic safe or the deliberate safety off of an offense's arsenal. I don't have a problem with that, although the problem with that is it happens like once every 90 games.
What impact would it have? Again, yeah, I'm kind of back where we were in the other one. What impact?
Although it would force a team in a tight spot when they've got the ball and they're backed up and your defense all of a sudden found itself and you're backing them up, that they got to do something. You know, they've got to do something with the ball. They can't get out of it by running out the back of the end zone.
From our tweet sheet, this tweet from Rob Fiend, rules change. When the Patriots score a touchdown, they only get 1 point. Okay. Come on. Yeah. here's an interesting one, it sounds like. Dick in Depew. Hello, Dick. Welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, John. Hi, Steve. There's one thing that bothers me, one play that bothers me, and I don't know why, but it was a TV game. The Bills were not involved. The ball was kicked into the end zone. The receiver caught the ball and immediately flipped it to the ref. I always thought that the guy that even though he catches it in the end zone, he's got to take a knee.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. And sometimes, and listen, if the official catches it and blows the play dead, he blows the play dead. But you're right. He's supposed to down it and take a knee. That's going to change, though. I mean, thanks for the call, Dick. I appreciate it. But that's going to change with the new rules. They want the play to go dead as soon as possible. So they're not going to – they're not going to throw little details in about, say, hey, the guy's got to touch his knee or he's got to go down as soon as he catches it or we're going to keep the play live. You know, that's not going to happen. It's going to go dead immediately. So, yeah, your rule is going to go away. He's not going to have to take a knee or anything. It's just going to be a dead ball.
Here's a call from Tim in Angola, New York. Hello, Tim. Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
The one rule I'd like to see change is half the yardage penalty. Like if you're at your 5-yard line, you got 95 yards to go, you run the ball, you get a holding penalty, and you only go back 2 yards.
Yeah.
I'd like to see the first down marker move up 10 yards, so it'll be first and 20. instead of first and 12. I'll hang up and listen to your comments. Thanks.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I got to think.
That's not a bad idea. So if his point is, whenever you take a penalty and there's not enough yardage behind you or ahead of you to make the penalty work. So if you're on your own 5-yard line and you get an offsides penalty, you can't go back to the goal line. You only go back to the 2.5-yard line. His thing is, we'll just move the sticks out ahead of the penalty. So you get an extra 5 yards before you get the first down. Now, what do you do at the other end of the field when you're on the 5-yard line and the defense gets a holding or whatever? You can only go half the distance in. Now, how does that change things?
Right.
You know,
what
would you do then? Do you have the reciprocating thing where you get an extra down, or you know, what do you do then? Or maybe you just leave it the way it is. They go half the distance. Maybe that's just the way it's going to work. When you're backed up as an offense, they move the down markers. And when you're backed up as a defense, you get half the distance.
It's an interesting question.
That is an interesting question. But I like that.
Yeah.
I like it because, you know, when you're on your own 1-yard line and you do something crazy or whatever, and it costs you 5 yards of extra field position. I like that. That's one way, because we had Lorenzo Alexander on. Every defensive player you have on, they talk about the rule change and stuff. And they all favor the offense.
They always do.
This is one that favors the defense.
Yeah.
And I kind of like it. I like it a lot. That's a good one.
Here's a call from Jeff in West Seneca. Hello, Jeff. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for letting me join the conversation. The rule change that I would do that I think makes the most sense in terms of safety is when you're down, the play is dead. How many times have you seen where a guy falls down and three guys dive in there, the crown of the helmet, and cause an injury? NFL says, you know, they're doing everything they can to make the game safer, prevent concussions. They would enact this rule. And I kind of see it as all, you know, black and white. I mean, you enact this rule, you will prevent injuries.
What are you talking about? So you don't have to be down by contact? Is that what you're saying? If you fall down, you're down?
Exactly. Just like in college rules. When you're down, you're down. You don't have to be touched.
Yeah, I mean, I see that. I don't know I remember plays like that way in the past where you say, you know, a guy kind of stumbles and falls and six guys jump on him, spear him in the back or whatever. It used to happen a lot in the 60s. But I don't see that too much now. Guys are kind of coming in and touching the guy down more so than these. I don't see, you know, three guys going in and jumping on the guy trying to make sure he's down. When he's down, he's down. I don't know that I would go to the college rule and say if the guy goes down, he's down, although I don't have a problem with it. I think one of the reasons they don't do that is because they want to give these guys a chance to be athletes. And if they trip and fall or whatever, they need a chance to get back up. I don't know that I would change that, but that's an interesting rule, Jeff. I don't know that it would make the game safer, but I know a lot of good plays that could happen would be blown dead way too early.
From the tweet sheet from T-Mac, on changes to the rules, which rule would you change in the NFL? He said you can start by cutting the rule book in half. But overall, having to interpret what is a catch and not a catch is getting absolutely ridiculous. Well, you know, they've got a new rule
trying.
This year on catches,
they're
right?
Trying. It's been a mantra here. I've said it every time I'm on the air. The NFL's going to get that right. They're going to get that catch rule right.
You sure?
And sometimes
– I know you say that all
listen,
the time. But
they
look,
do.
This is not a 1 or 2 year problem, Steve. This is like a 10 or 15 year problem.
Listen,
a catch, what's not a catch?
2 years ago.
You know what the real problem is, Steve?
What?
Replay.
Oh, come on.
No, I mean, it influences how we view catches. That's why it's a problem, why catches are a problem now. But go ahead. I'm telling you, with
that's HD, a bug on the windshield, man. That ain't stopping the train.
With HD television, with enhanced slow mo, all of a sudden the ball is followed and the pixels are examined so you can see the ball move a little bit. And it was not until HD and instant replay did we have these issues about what's it. When you were a little kid, did anybody talk about, oh, I don't know what a catch is anymore? No, it came along with the use of replay and officiating.
And it's going to continue, even though they may get this right. It's going to continue because – no matter how you – I keep going back to this. No matter how you write that rule, you're going to have 15 instances on a given Sunday where, I don't know if you wrote that rule right. This should be a catch, but it's not. The question is, are we going to accept this new rule? And when you see it on the film and you say it's not a catch because of this, 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 and everybody's going to go, you know what, you're right.
Before replay, did anybody debate, I don't know what a catch is? No, we all knew what a catch was. Before replay was used to officiate
games. No. It was always a debate, And not only that, the debate was just cut short because they didn't have a choice.
Fine.
That's it.
Fine.
The debate went on. And, in fact, you go back and look at the – you ask people that used to play for the Houston Oilers about the catch that Renfro made in the back of this Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh going to the Super Bowl. They got robbed of a Super Bowl trip. Yeah, that's why we need replay, Murph.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
You can't let – no, come on. You can't let a team get snapped off of a Super Bowl appearance because an official missed it, completely missed it.
They still make mistakes, even with replay. They still make mistakes, costly mistakes.
No.
They still make them.
No, no, no. They're not making mistakes. What they're making is you're mad at the rule for what it says. You're not mad at the officials
making
for making
mistakes.
They're making mistakes.
They
make a mistake, but it's correctable.
They're not always corrected.
What do you mean?
They're not always corrected. Calvin Benjamin in the end zone at New England. How is that rule? Yeah, the rule was bad, but how does that not get changed on replay? Or how does it get – wait, I'm sorry. How does it get changed on replay? The call on the field was touchdown, makes the catch. They look at it on replay and they change it to not a touchdown. They admit that was a mistake. Right?
Well, okay.
Alberto Riveron admitted –
all right.
He admitted it in January, February.
Okay.
Well, you know, who
okay.
do you have
they admitted
that?
It. That they messed it up.
And they messed them up without the replay
Murph,
as well.
You would have 50 of those a weekend, not one a season.
Just to be clear, I'm not saying do away with replay, never look at replay, but don't use it to officiate games. I'm telling you, that's the way it's got to be.
What difference does it make if you look at it and everybody sees it?
Because all of a sudden we're examining, well, did that ball move? Did that bounce around? Did he have control? Did he go to the ground? Did he keep it when he went to the ground? Come on.
Get off my lawn.
I'm telling you, it's got to happen.
All right.
It's got to happen.
Right, I get you. I get you. And listen, it's one of the hot debates that guys like us talk about all the time, particularly, and it's not going to stop.
Replays, believe me, I'd be shocked if they ever
they're not
get away
it.
With replaying
I
and officiating. But I will tell you this, I am going to make the point whenever I can that it is ruined the way the game is officiated. Use of instant replay in officiating
I'll
the
give
game.
You another. I'll give you another, and I don't want, because I disagree with you, but I'll agree with you on this. When the Kelvin Benjamin play happened in New England, I don't know if you remember this, when he went in, caught it, went out of the end zone, both those officials stood there for like 3 seconds and looked at each other.
Yeah, because, the one official, we should show the play again for those watching on TV. The guy who made the call watched Benjamin complete the catch, then he looked at his feet, then he checked with his partner, and then signaled touchdown. You could see him go through his
checklist.
It takes
forever.
It didn't take that long.
I thought
what took
it
forever was the replay review. He went through his checklist of everything that has to happen to constitute a catch. You can see him. He's the guy standing in the end zone. Look, feet inbounds, my partner there, that's a second and a half touchdown. And they overturned that? And that wasn't even the worst call that was made last year.
That was a horrific call. There's just no question about it.
You can see him go through his checklist in his head.
See, he points.
I'd love to talk to that official. I had his name back when it happened back in
Boom.
December.
Feet toe drag.
Down, toe drag, maintains possession to the ground, checks with his partner at the other end of the end zone.
You can
see him go through the whole checklist.
And I'll tell you this, Alberto Riveron has gotten a lot of heat for that.
You should.
You can't miss a play like that. And then when you split fine hairs like that, that's the rabbit hole you go down when you go.
That's
to replay.
What replay does. It encourages people to split hairs.
I'll admit that. No question about it. But all right. But they're simplifying it this year. We'll see how it goes. And I agree with you. Just do it. We can go on to this thing. This replay is playing right in front of us for all our radio listeners. We're watching this replay about 50 times, six different ways.
Still makes me
and
angry.
It's still a touch. It's still a touchdown.
A break. We're back with more. Yeah. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. One Bills Live. John Murphy, Steve Tasker on a beautiful day in Orchard Park. I don't know who's out on the field at New Era Field. The rookies are here for the rookie development program. In fact, we saw them doing yoga, right, this morning.
I don't know if it might have been yoga. It was something. Yeah, they had the mats out.
It was something.
And there was a yoga-looking instructor out there. So
what does that mean, a yoga?
I don't know. I don't do yoga. What's it look like?
It looked like what you saw. That was yoga.
All right.
It looked like rudimentary yoga. But the rookies are here. The veterans come back Monday. They got one more off-season conditioning program session on Monday. And then Tuesday, OTAs. It gets a little bit better, doesn't it, in OTAs? There'll be offense versus defense. No contact, obviously. No pads. But offense versus defense, they'll work together. And I think the tempo will pick up a little bit Tuesday. I'm looking forward to that.
You haven't lived until you've seen offensive linemen do yoga.
That's what gets
it's
your attention.
Riveting stuff here at One Bills Drive.
Our topic today deals with the NFL owners meeting in Atlanta, Georgia next week. Going to go over some rules changes. We want to know from you if you have any ideas for them. What rules would you like to see altered? Maybe removed from the rule book. What rules would you like to see change a little bit? Give us a call. Lines open, 803-0550. Outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free at 1-888-552-550. Or do it on Twitter at One Bills Live.
Yeah, and you think back, Tim Donovan tweets in, Bills are lucky replay wasn't effective during the comeback game. BB's touchdown wouldn't have counted because he notoriously went out of bounds before he came back in and caught the first touchdown. The Bills scored that game to bring it at 35-10, it might not have counted if they had if they would have replayed it. Also,
a lot of history would have been different.
Right, and then also,
so what?
Catch Fresh tweeted in, "How about 4 points for a field goal above 55 yards?" I like that one.
Do you?
I do. I do.
4 points is a lot, Steve. Is a 56-yard field goal worth more than a touchdown? 2/3 of a touchdown trip to the end zone. That seems like a lot.
2/3.
Well,
yeah,
I mean, 6 points versus 4.
Yeah, but it's a field goal that on average and on the statistics will say is less than a coin flip to get it. Plus, don't forget, if you miss it, you're giving the ball back, even if you do it on first down.
I would think hard about that. I'm not saying no.
I like it.
But I don't know if I want to give many points to a kick.
We don't get – you know, we're not in the loop. We don't get a final say in this. So we can agree.
We can
agree wholeheartedly without giving the league the permission to change the rule just on our show.
I'm pretending we're in the loop. They're listening.
All right, I'm with you then.
Gary on a cell phone. Gary, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
How y'all doing?
Good, man. What's up?
Yeah, I'd like to see the pass interference. Do, like, college go 15 yards? I just think that would make the game – more of a game. They just throw these long bombs at the end of the game sometimes, begging for a pass interference.
What do you think about, would it be an automatic first down or just a yardage?
Oh, I think a first down in the 15 yards. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Throw a 60-yard ball, you know, the guy doesn't catch it, and the guy touches him, and then they give him a flag. You know, I don't mind if it's, like, the guy's dragging him down. But some of these little tic-tac pass interference calls are getting old.
Gary, what do you do with the big plays that are, you know, deliberate pass interference? 60-yard plays.
So I guess that had to be tweaked. Maybe if it was so obvious. I know it's kind of a tough thing to say, you know, because people are going to have different opinions on it. But if you drag a guy down, that would be, you know, that's fair. But sometimes, John, you know, the guy just barely touches the guy, and they're going to give it to the offensive player. They don't call it on the receivers as much as they should. It, you know, it always goes to the defensive player. A lot of times the receivers is grabbing the defensive back just as much, and they always call the defensive back.
Yeah. I agree, and that's a good call, Gary. Thank you. And I, one of the things too is if you're, whenever you get into this thing where what if it's egregious? It's like a flagrant two in the NBA where you know they're going to call it if the guy makes contact to the head or if it's a deliberate foul or an intentional hard foul. You could do that in the NFL, but then that brings replay into the whole thing because then I would say the teams would say, listen, you got to review that. It's like a turnover if you're going to give the guy a 40-yard pass interference on an egregious pass interference, you got to review it and make sure. That might slow the end of the game down when it's one of those times when you know it gets tedious anyway at some of these games when a team's trying to get back into it and they're 15 points down or 18 points down. But I think that's a slippery slope that you'd be going down if you did that because you'd almost have to make that mandatorily reviewable.
It's a call from Nick in Buffalo. Nick, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Yeah, two quick questions, guys. Opinion on one. I think that, you know, the concussion thing is a very big thing in the league now. I think it's changed the game, period, and I don't think it's changed the game for the better. Though it is a safer game, it's not the game that I fell in love with back when I first started watching this years ago. And Steve, you know this. You remember the helmet that Kelso used to wear?
Yep.
The little soft shell thing?
Yep.
I mean, I don't understand why, and basically all this concussion that we started losing all the quarterbacks in our league, and we were getting a worse game because we didn't have the quarterbacks to go around for every team. And a lot of them came from that snap thing when they're, you know, the athletes on defense are so much faster now when they hit the quarterback. It hurt a lot more now than it did back in the old days. Their head snaps off that turf. I can't understand how they haven't put something behind the quarterback's head for that case alone. Like, I don't know, some of the linemen used to wear that roll thing. Something like a 4x4 pad, like a sponge pad in the back of the helmet. even might not be aesthetically pleasing, but for the quarterback's safety, if he snaps back onto that pad that's going to be like 3 inches thick of foam, or to take it even better, why can't everybody's helmet have some kind of sponge to absorb? They have to make such great things in the world today. You're trying to tell me they can't fix a helmet to absorb something? Why does the helmet have to be so hard in the first place? I mean, you could have that underneath a pad on the outside. I think that would save a lot of concussions.
Right. One thing, Nick, I will say, Nick.
Go ahead, Nick. I mean,
helmet technology has changed dramatically since you played.
I agree.
It changes every year.
That's one of the things that Nick's on the right track. I mean, they're going to do some things with the helmet technology that's going to change everything. And you're right. I mean, we all get used to seeing these helmets, and Mark Kelso is notorious. And it happens. I told you I get congratulated for running Leon Letdown in that Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I have for every month for 25 years. And it wasn't me who did it. It was Don Beebe. I also get saying, hey, yeah, you're that guy that wore that helmet. I know that was Kelso. So I get that a lot, too, when I'm out and about doing stuff on a national level. I think here's the thing, Nick. You're right. There's certain things that they could do with these helmets. I mean, and, you know, a lot of guys are – you know, the players are all about how it fits and does it hinder my movements? Does it make it hard for me to play my sport? Can I? And a quarterback doesn't want to. They have a thing, for lack of a better term, in NASCAR they have what's called a Hans device, which is something that attaches the helmet to the shoulders and the seat, and so they can kind of turn their head, but when something really happens, it keeps them from being whiplashed and that kind of stuff. Football players, they've toyed with that. We had a guy on our team, Jimmy Richer, who had his helmet attached to his shoulder pads in the back. He couldn't turn his head. A quarterback has to be able to do that. There are certain restrictions that just don't make it possible to play football like you need to play it. So you're right, though. The caller's right. Helmet technology can go a long way towards making the game safer, particularly, obviously, with concussions and also with helmet-to-helmet contact. So you can bet that that's going to happen and continue to happen as the league progresses forward. But until it makes it completely go away, the league is going to keep continuing to evolve towards a safer game.
A lot of good ideas, though. Thanks for calling, and we'll get more of your calls on as the show moves along. What rule would you change in the National Football League? When we return, we're going to talk with a pretty keen observer of the NFL. We'll talk with Steve Weich of the NFL Network. Got some interesting thoughts on A.J. McCarron and some other NFL issues, so come on back for that. 1 hour down, two to go, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. Kind of a quiet day. The veterans are gone. The rookies are here at One Bills Drive, and another day of their rookie development program. The veterans off today. The veterans return on Monday for the final day of the team offseason conditioning work, phase three, and then OTA start next Tuesday with, as we said earlier, offense versus defensive drills. That starts next Tuesday here at One Bills Drive. Stanley Cup hockey tonight. The Winnipeg Jets go to Vegas for game four of their series of the Western Conference Finals. It is an 8 o'clock faceoff tonight in Vegas, and the Golden Knights lead the Western Conference Final 2-1. Last night, Tampa Bay beat Washington 4-2 in Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals. That series tied up at 2 wins apiece. Game 5 takes place in Tampa tomorrow. Philadelphia Eagles getting set for their visit to the White House to celebrate their Super Bowl win over the Patriots. The invitation came in late April, and the date is officially set now June 5th. The Eagles go to Washington to be celebrated at the White House. The Seattle Seahawks signed their fifth-round draft pick linebacker Shaquem Griffin to a 4-year rookie deal, a deal worth $2.8 million over 4 years. Griffin lost his left hand at age 4 because of a rare condition before birth. He will join his brother, cornerback Shaquille Griffin, on the Seahawks roster. And the Buffalo Bisons set up to play a homestand starting tonight. Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders in town. 7:05 first pitch tonight at the downtown ballpark for the Bisons, who are back home for a little while. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live is our show. And joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a keen observer of NFL goings-on. We're happy to have NFL Network host, analyst, reporter, NFL.com senior writer, Steve Weich on the line with us. Steve, it's John Murphy and Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Gentlemen, thanks for having me on. Hope all is well.
All is well. We're three days away from the announcement that the Thurman Thomas number is going to be retired this fall. And I saw on Twitter that you thought that was the right move. Tell us why you like that move, Steve.
Well, first off, I think I'm with the legions of people who are like, wait a second, wasn't already retired?
Yeah. A lot of people said that.
Yeah, Bills don't do it very often.
By that. That was one of those teams like, wow. I mean, look, he's one of the greatest Buffalo Bills ever. He's one of the greatest running backs in NFL history, and I think it's just such a worthy tribute to retire the number, to never let anybody wear that again just because of the special place he has in that region with that club. And again, the NFL, it's I'm sure it's going to be a huge moment for him and for his teammates to actually see that recognition. I mean, he was just so great. I remember going back to Oklahoma State, you know, back when I was a scrub walk-on redshirt at University of Missouri playing football. And I think the world of him as a person and as a player, and I think it's just a proper tribute.
We love Thurman. We think he is deserving. He's only the third Buffalo Bill to have his number retired. I'll be honest with you, Steve, and I'll let Steve Tasker talk about this. I like the fact that they don't retire a lot of numbers here. I think it should be a singular honor. It's only Thurman and Bruce Smith and Jim Kelly here in Buffalo. I kind of like that.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I mean, you don't retire a ton of numbers because soon you're going to run out. You got to ask people to unretire him with so many great players. But no, I'm with you on this. He's deserving of it, but you know, not a whole lot of people are. It's a high tribute.
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve. Thanks for coming on the show. I just want to ask you too. One of the things that's been going on here, as you know, is the Bills drafted Josh Allen, and there's a lot of hoopla about him and this rookie class coming out of the draft. And a lot of people look at the Buffalo Bills roster and see kind of a little bit of a void, or at least at best case, a big, huge question mark at quarterback. You had some things to say about AJ McCarron, and I'm kind of with you when the Cincinnati Bengals released him. I thought he was one of the most intriguing guys available because he wasn't like the one of these guys that had the huge year this last year, finally, like Nick Foles or Case Keenum or somebody like that. He was behind an incumbent in Cincinnati. We never got a chance to really look at him, but you think he can really play. Is that right?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I think back years ago, I covered the Atlanta Falcons and worked in Atlanta. I think back to Matt Schaub. Kind of similar circumstances. You saw a lot of flashes of Schaub in preseason. New opportunities in the regular season, which he capitalized on. I mean, maybe it didn't look dazzling, but he sure as heck looked like an NFL starter. And we saw for several years, Matt Schaub was routinely throwing for over 4,000 yards, and his successes were, you know, perennial playoff contender with Schaub. And I think AJ McCarron can have that same opportunity because, you know, unlike a Mike Glennon, who in Tampa had some opportunities to start and just kind of showed himself to be okay, McCarron's a young guy who really hasn't had that break. And I think he's going to compete like hell. I think he's really going to be a good leader in that locker room. But I think the competitive edge he's going to have will at least let him start the season. And I think the Bills have a good enough team to win plenty of games with him as the starter, which could make the transition to Josh Allen tough, which is why I think if Josh Allen's going to get playing time this year, he's got to get it out of the gate. Because I just think McCarron, he's a very capable quarterback who, again, hasn't had that opportunity. He's going to compete like hell to win that job. And I think he's got a good opportunity to win it and to hold on to it for a little bit.
Steve, I ask Steve Tasker this question all the time, and I get what McCarron did at Cincinnati, but why did the Bengals not give him a chance to play more if he was, you know, if he was that good?
Yeah, Andy Dalton. It's plain and simple. I mean, Matt Schaub was a good player in Atlanta, but they had Michael Vick. This happens. You know, you saw Tyrod Taylor there. For several years, he sat behind Joe Flacco. Yeah, Tyrod's not a great player, but he won games. So, I mean, there's just some guys who are just in position who just don't get the opportunity. Look at Case Keenum. He bounced around, gets into the right system. He lit it up last year in Minnesota. They didn't think he had as high of a ceiling as Kirk Cousins, so they decided to make a move. But he sure as heck showed he was a capable starter in the NFL, and he took the Vikings, you know, to the brink of getting to the Super Bowl. So, you know, that could be a similar scenario with a McCarron, but he just had an incumbent in front of him.
Yeah, I think one of the things, too, and you can speak to this maybe, Steve, is that when you come in, a lot of us outside of Cincinnati, around the league and around the national media, we're kind of like, okay, Andy Dalton is a starter, but he's on the low end of incumbent starters. He's not a great player. In fact, you look back at all those playoff runs that the Cincinnati Bengals have put together with Marvin Lewis. They haven't gotten out of the first round yet, wild card or division. They can't win a game. And a lot of us point the finger at Andy Dalton, and therefore, if Andy Dalton is that bad of a quarterback, A.J. McCarron couldn't be any better. Is there a little bit of the fact that, you know, the Cincinnati Bengals, if they're paying their starter, the starter's going to start no matter who the backup is?
There you go. I mean, I think that's part of it.
I mean, they're paying a head coach who hasn't won a playoff game either, and he's still there as well. I mean, it all depends on your organization's philosophy, and I think that they made that commitment, that head coach and that staff made that commitment to Andy Dalton, and they were going to ride with him. Maybe they didn't see him as the overall problem. And, you know, I'm sure that's why A.J. McCarron's kind of sitting there like, you know, I can't do any worse. You know, why don't you give me a shot? But he didn't get that opportunity, so now he's got the shot. I mean, remember, Cleveland was going to give up a second, third-round pick for him last year. They just couldn't get the facts in on time to do that. That's pretty heavy freight. I mean, Hugh Jackson thought enough of him to go ahead and make that move. And, you know, I wouldn't doubt if the same people were in place in Cleveland that they might not have made the same move in this offseason. They had different leadership in place, and they decided to go with Baker Mayfield in the draft.
Steve White, NFL Network host, analyst, reporter on the line with us. You mentioned McCarron is, I believe, one of the three underrated personnel moves of the offseason. I guess overlooked personnel moves is the way you put it. Another one you have is a guy we're familiar with from the Jets, Sheldon Richardson, who was signed by Minnesota. What do you see there? Why do you think that's overlooked, Steve?
I think it's overlooked just because, one, he signed a one-year deal. He's a guy who didn't live up to, in some people's eyes, the promise, especially once he got traded to Seattle. I think a lot of people felt that he was a guy who could really make that defensive line ultra-dominant with some of the pieces they've had. But, you know, things just kind of fell apart overall with Seattle, not just on the defensive front. But I think it's overlooked because he's also joining a star-studded team. I think he's going to be enabled by having, you know, Danielle Hunter and playing with Everson Griffin and Linval Joseph. He's going to be a lot like Ndamukong Suh with the Rams, where here's a guy who at one point was the number one defensive line option, getting double and triple teamed and things like that. Now he's the guy who's going to get singled because of all the pieces around him. So I think he's someone who could really blow up. He's on a one-year deal, so he's playing for a big contract. And I think he's someone, because of where he is and the circumstance and the personnel around him, he could really be a dominant player this season.
One of the other things that's on the docket for everybody is you look at all these teams assembling their 90-man rosters and you see the guys that they have in place. Who do you look around in the National Football League? Who do you think has the best roster out there? I mean, you can go through all 32 teams and make cases for a lot of them. But, you know, there's got to be somebody out there who you think, you know, I think they're pretty good.
Well, there's a couple teams with some pretty outstanding rosters. Now, you know, one that's starting to gain a little bit of traction after the draft is Los Angeles Chargers. I mean, you look at yourself and you're like, okay, Phillip Rivers, they've got Melvin Gordon in the backfield. You've got Keenan Allen. You know, Mike Williams, last year's first-round draft, that comes in healthy. You know, wide receiver, they've got unbelievable depth. Tyrell Williams. Offensive line gets better. Now, Forrest Lamp, the guard they drafted last year in the second rounder, who many people projected as a first rounder, he had a setback. He had to go back into that knee and get it scoped out a little bit. Missed all last season with an ACL. We'll see. But every position at every level on that defense is strong, especially with the drafting of safety Derwin James out of Florida State. He's going to play that free safety Earl Thomas type role in the scheme that Gus Bradley runs out there. But, I mean, you look at Casey Hayward and Verrett at the corners. You look at, you know, the linebackers where you've got Melvin Ingram, and they drafted Uchenna Nwosu out of USC. That D-line is stacked with Bosa and some of those other players. I mean, that's a team, we say it every year, it's kind of like a remix. Chargers are loaded on paper, but it's just a matter of can they win games early in the season, which has really been their Achilles heel for years.
Hey, Steve, one thing you've commented on NFL Network, and it's kind of, again, as the offseason goes on, it becomes more predominant as a topic of discussion. It's safety play, and there are a couple of kind of really talented safeties who are still not on rosters. I'm thinking of Eric Reed and Trey Boston. What do you think's going on there? Is it just social activism that has them both on the sidelines still?
No. You know, I don't think Trey Boston did a whole lot. I know Eric Reed, you know, he's filed a collusion lawsuit. He's very tight with Colin Kaepernick. He was the first player to join Colin Kaepernick in taking a knee during the playing of the national anthem. And some teams, let's be blunt about it, are not going to bring him in because of it. But, you know, I spoke to some personnel guys over the past few days, and this actually is not unusual for the safety market. First off, there have been 17 safeties already who've either signed extensions, re-signed, or been signed as free agents. So that's a good chunk. Over the last two seasons, there have been 19 safeties drafted in the first three rounds, including eight this year, three of whom were drafted in the first round. So
right now at this point, teams are looking at these young safeties, seeing how they fit in with some of the schematics that they want to use, and then they'll get to some of these guys a little bit later. This is not an unusual phenomenon. It's just the fact that you do have a guy like Eric Reed, who's high profile for being a former first-round draft pick and a good player, but also the social activism. And Trey Boston is coming off of an 8-interception season, who's still out of work, that's really grabbed people's attention. But it's, again, I think teams are looking through some of these younger players right now, and there's a lot of talent, a lot of young talent that teams can get on these long-term rookie deals that just kind of suits what they're looking for right now. But I do think these veteran players will end up with a team before training camp, if not sooner.
Steve, one more question for you, and it's back to the Buffalo Bills, because I recall that I think it was relatively shortly after the Bills were eliminated in the wild card of the playoffs by Jacksonville, you wrote and talked about how you thought Buffalo was headed in the right direction under Sean McDermott, right? Do you feel that way? And what's your general outlook of where the Bills are going?
Fantastic coach. I mean, anybody who doubts that, I mean, you think about last season when they got rid of Sammy Watkins and all of these playmaker-type guys, and they get to the playoffs, and they're a tough, physical team. And you look what he's doing. You know, they're doing organizationally with the coaching staff up there. Then they go out this year, and they're kind of making themselves into the Carolina Panthers North. They go out and they get Star Lotulelei, and they're beefing up that defensive front. You know, philosophy they had down in Carolina and in Philadelphia that McDermott used. I think there's some questions about some of the big playability on offense. Of course, quarterback is going to be an issue, but I think McDermott and that staff, I think they're fantastic. They proved themselves last year. It's going to be a challenge this year, again, incorporating a new quarterback, figuring out what they want to be offensively, which, of course, are going to be a run-first team. But I don't see – I mean, look, New England's still going to be the team to beat, but I don't see any reason why there should be any drop-off, if not improvement, from what they established last season.
I hope you're right. Hey, Steve, thanks for this. We appreciate you spending a few minutes with us today. Thank you very much.
Hey, really appreciate you having me on.
Thanks. Steve Weiss, he is the NFL Network host, analyst, reporter, senior writer for NFL.com. Joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. He's an intelligent guy. I like the way he thinks about a lot of stuff. And his comments on the Chargers, look, I've fallen into it a couple of times over the last few years, going into a season thinking, well, the Chargers are loaded. The Chargers are going to the Super Bowl. Never seems to fire for them, you know? It's weird.
What, chronically speaking, they're a ton of seasons that since I've been in broadcasting, they've come out so flat in the first month of the season. And last year was the exact example of that. They were like 0-5, 0-6 to start the season. Then they finished with a flurry and got shut out of the playoffs because they lost so many games early on. But at the end of the season, nobody wanted any part of that team. And the Bills saw what they could do in their own building, you know, hanging 54 points on it. They are good. And the question for them is, can Anthony Lynn get them out of the gate faster than they did a year ago? Because at the end of the season, they were every bit the team Jacksonville was. They were every bit the team that Steelers were. They were a good football team, and getting out of the gate really is what's held them back in years past, and I think it did last year, no question.
I'm a big Anthony Lynn fan. I liked him here a lot when he was coaching as an assistant coach, and then – of course, had that last game as the head coach, the interim head coach.
Have you read the stuff? I mean, Anthony Lynn, I spoke with him, too, when he was a coach here, and he was really outstanding. I thought, wow, this is, you know, and he took over when Greg Roman was fired. He was the guy that got the offensive coordinator's job and subsequently got hired as the head coach at the Los Angeles Chargers. And this last offseason, he went back and graduated from college, got his degree, needed 13 credit hours. He did it over the course of this last summer, he walked across the stage last weekend in cap and gown. He missed 2 days of the Chargers off-season workouts to go do it. In fact, the Spanos family, the owners, they were saying, no, you got to go do it because it's a great example for our players. I mean, because you know, most of these players, the high draft picks and stuff, and you can see they're here. They're not going to Clyde. They're not finishing up school. They're here. So Anthony Lynn was kind of one of those guys, went on to a short career, left his degree unfinished, like a lot of players do, and just never went back to get it. And it was like years. I mean, it's been a couple of decades later, he finally went back and got it done this last weekend. It's
a great
cool
moment. Yeah, great pictures from it. And he talked about it. Anthony Lynn talked to the media in L.A. earlier this week about going back to Nevada, Las Vegas to get his college degree. Here's what he had to say.
It meant the world to me, and especially on Mother's Day weekend. you know, just having her there where I could give her that diploma. Well, give her that fake diploma. I thought I was going to get the diploma when I walked across the stage. I didn't realize
they sent it to you later.
Yeah. I didn't know that. So, but just her being there and being part of that on Mother's Day, it just meant the world to me. You know, she always wanted me to graduate. She never said a word when I didn't, but I knew.
Anthony Lynn talking to NFL Network about that. He's a great guy. You know him, Steve.
He's
got a great backstory too. You know, he had that he hit by a car right in Dallas, I think it was, with and he had to recover from that. Bounced around the league a little bit, got hooked up with Rex at the Jets, and then came up here. He's got his wife, I believe, is still a news anchor in New York City.
Yes,
on the
she's
air
still
every day
on
in New
air,
York City.
On air talent. And here's the thing too, when he came on board with Rex as a head coach here in Buffalo, and he was part of their staff. Rex Ryan was so taken with him. He said, he really went out of his way. When the vacancy came up in the offensive staff, he promoted Anthony Lynn, and he went beyond that. Rex Ryan did. He recommended him for the head coaching jobs that were available last year, and the Chargers were lucky enough to get him. You wish him nothing but the best.
I love that guy.
Although he did come back and hammer the Bills pretty good last year.
Doing his job.
Yeah.
You know, he was such
job.
A good detail guy. When he was here coaching running backs, our producer, Jay Harris, used to help him out. Coach Lynn would come up. They'd sign a running back late in the season, say, and they're trying to get that guy ready to play. This is a couple of years ago now when Anthony was just coaching running backs. And they needed the running back to hear the cadence of the quarterback. So they would bring the quarterback into our old radio studio. Remember the closet over there in the old building?
Oh, yeah. They have a closet.
Have them do cadence into a microphone. Jay would record it. They would put it on a disc or on a little card, and he'd give it to the running back and tell the guy, listen to this all the week. You got to listen to this. This is what EJ sounds like, or whoever it was. This is what Tyrod sounds like calling out plays.
Right.
It was pretty cool. Detail guy.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Because that's – you know, it's what you see and hear that, you know, affects you on the – and when you feel – and it feels familiar, you feel comfortable and you play better. That's pretty interesting technique.
Steve White's talked about them having the best roster, perhaps, in the NFL. Steve White, who we just had on the air. John Elway, general manager of the Denver Broncos, division rivals of the Los Angeles Chargers. Elway says the Chargers might be the team to beat in the AFC West. And here's what Anthony Lynn had to say about that.
Sounds like a mousetrap to me. That's all I can say about that, Drew. You know, we know Kansas City won this division. You know, they had a good draft. They brought in some key free agents. Oh, that's still the team to beat in this division. And until we beat Kansas City, you know, we can't even talk about playoffs and things like that. We got to beat Kansas City. But, you know, I take it as a compliment. But, you know, we have a lot of work to do. I like this football team. I'm excited about this football team, but like I said, we have a lot of work to do.
Phillip said that the pieces are there to do something special. You buy that?
Absolutely. I thought the pieces were there last year to do something special. You know, no different than this year. And we've added some more guys. You know, I feel like we did a heck of a job of bringing in the right people to fit our locker room in free agency and the draft. So, like I said, I'm excited about our football team. But we have to go to work, you know. There's so much parity in this league right now. You just don't know who's going to emerge from year to year. And it's all about what team comes together the best during the season, during the offseason right now, training camp. And develop that chemistry and trust one another and lean on one another and play for one another. And, you know, that's not easy. You have to work at that.
Anthony Lynn, head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers. The Bills' home opener against the Chargers week 2, September 16th, should be a heck of a game. That's a tough division, Steve, when you think about it.
Are.
You know, Oakland should bounce back from last year. They've got plenty of talent there.
Right.
Chargers, we're talking about here. Denver, maybe something left from the Super Bowl team from a couple of years ago.
The Chargers started
out. Kansas City is good too.
Chargers started out 0-4 last year, and the Chiefs went 6-0. That's a big hole to dig out of. And they ended up second in the division. They almost did dig out of it. They won. They won 9 out of their last 12 games to finish the season, and that's a big hole to climb out of. And that's, you know, so that if they can get out of the blocks in this season a little better than they did last year, they're a tough team. And you're right. He's right. They do have a lot of talent. They've got some – everything starts with Phillip Rivers. And if you can believe it, so you think back that Phillip Rivers was traded straight across for Eli Manning. And the knock on Phillip Rivers was he had a funky delivery, a sidearm delivery that I don't know how good – I don't know if – you know, he's going to bang footballs off guys' helmets. His delivery is too low. and all he's done is have a Hall of Fame career, and he's one of the most accurate passers in the league. And I spoke to head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, Frank Reich, when he was a coach in San Diego. He was the quarterback's coach. He said, Phillip Rivers is a savant when it comes to protections and how he's protected in the pocket. And he's, even when the ball is in a shotgun snap in the air towards Phillip Rivers, he's talking to his running back, telling him where to go. The guy's unbelievable. And that, and having him on your side, as Anthony Lynn does, they're set up to make some noise in that division. No question about it. They've got to feel good about the way they finished the season last year, even though they just missed the playoffs. So I'm, you know, that you talk about a team that could go from bad to really good in a hurry. That it's the Chargers with Phillip Rivers if he stays healthy.
Did you do any CBS games at is it StubHub Center?
Is I did not. Oh, I did not. It intimate, is isn't it?
Steve, I went there thinking, what kind of an, you know, you go there, you hear about it, you hear how small it is.
25,000 seats.
You think, what is this? This is not the NFL. And you get there and you're like, oh, yeah, you love it because it is so small, and the broadcast booths are right on top of the field, which is great. But the crowd is right on top of the field. Yeah. It's Southern California.
Little soccer sunny. Stadium.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's a campus of, what is it, Cal State something, Dominguez Hills or something. So it's a beautiful California college campus with this stadium right in there, and it's got kind of what you need for an NFL stadium, right? Music, right, yeah. And the atmosphere. But it's so small and so intimate, and it's perfect. And if they ever get win in there, that would be a heck of a home field event. Can you imagine a playoff game in that place, 25,000-seat place?
Pretty cool.
You'll love it there.
I get it.
You go there thinking, what is this NFL? We got 73,000 seats in Buffalo. You get there and you're like, oh,
you want to be one. You want to be one of the 25,000 seats, right? Yeah. I get it. There's an appetite for it. I mean, and that's, you know, who knows how it's going to be when they move into whatever stadium they're going to move into, the palace they're building out there.
Yeah, you fly right over it, right, when you land.
Right. You're right. It is a different kind of intimate atmosphere. But I think we were talking today. Remember when the Buffalo Bills went in and played at the Liberty Bowl in Memphis?
Yeah, that was different.
Yeah, it was horrible, man. That was horrible. Hey, it was a dirt patch.
Yeah,
the stadium it wasn't quite the same fun thing that StubHub Stadium was.
All right, we're talking about a lot of things today, including the Chargers, including rules changes. NFL owners are going to meet early next week in Atlanta. Rules changes on the agenda for their votes. What do you think? Which rule would you change in the National Football League? It's our Twitter poll, so we've talked about it for a while. We'll take more phone calls at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. On Twitter, when we ask the question, which rule would you change in the NFL? Well, there's no poll there, but we want you to get your input on that. And we'd love to hear your voice doing it, too. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. One Bills Live on a Friday afternoon. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Beautiful day in Orchard Park. Going to be a little rainy here. Steve, you're getting out of town for the weekend, huh? You got people watching your house. You got some cold killers taking over.
Yeah, you always have to, you know, have people staying at the house. Yeah. You got to take the dogs out of their hair, take them to the kennel. But wrap things up.
Getting out of town for the weekend. That's good.
I got a wedding to go to. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, they're always great.
Yeah,
that's kind of the only. It's funny because I'm not really a party kind of hungry guy, but at weddings, when you're out there and everybody's kind of your vintage, you know, because it's parents of the bride and all that, it's more fun you can dance at a wedding. You can't just go to a club anymore and dance when you're my age or our age.
You used to?
Right. You can't just cut loose. So the weddings are the only time. Plus, you get some, they always sprinkle in some big band stuff too at weddings, so it's fun.
Will you bring, will you shoot some video and bring it in for Monday?
No.
You dancing, cutting loose?
There'll be none of that.
Maybe a big hit on the show. Yeah. Right? Let's do a Twitter poll on that.
Yeah.
How many people want to see Steve cut loose on the dance floor at his wedding this weekend?
I don't cut loose on the dance floor.
Yes, you do.
I do not.
No, I don't. Or other?
Other.
Vote on Twitter.
Other. That's the only other. That's the only other choice I've made on this show.
On Twitter today and on the telephone, we're asking you what rules changes should NFL owners consider when they meet next week in Atlanta. Give us a call. We'd love to hear your voice, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What do you got on the tweets there, Steve?
Yeah, from Chris, my idea for overtime. no punts, no field goals. 20-minute running clock and two timeouts per team. The winner of the coin toss can either choose to take the ball at their 35-yard line or go on defense. Why running clock, I wonder? Just
why no punts, no field goals? What do you do?
You got to score a touchdown to win.
So, all right, so you start at your own 20, three plays and out. Opponents get the ball on the 21-yard line?
Yeah, 35-yard line, he says. You can get the ball on your own 35 and go until you don't have the ball.
So,
or you can choose to go on defense and give them the ball.
I don't know about that one. Why no punts? Punts and kickoffs, and, by no the way, are part
goals.
Of the game.
No punts, no field goals.
Why no field goals?
I guess they say count. You kick it off for you know, whatever. We also had an earlier.
Don't like that one.
Yeah.
Crossing that one off.
We also had one that says, let's see, from Michael Lafferty. Replay should be used for blatant mistakes. If something is 50-50 or even 60-40, 40-60, should stay as called on the field. There should be no more conclusive evidence to overturn plays. And this is one of the things you brought up. If you're going to do replay, and there's another tweet involving that, just you can only run the replay at game speed.
Like it?
You got to run it at normal speed. If you have to slow it down and slice it up and go it like you call it, the high-def pixel dissection, then you know don't do that. Just go regular speed. Game speed, and if it looks good, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck at game speed, then it is a duck touchdown.
The only thing about that tweet from Michael Lafferty, I don't know what he means. He said if it's close, basically, it should stay as called. No more conclusive evidence to overturn calls and replay. Am I not understanding? What he's saying really is, yes,
unless,
you want conclusive evidence to overturn calls, not inconclusive close calls,
yeah.
Right?
He says there should be more. Non-conclusive
evidence.
There
should evidence. Be more. No,
yeah, if there's no conclusive evidence, you don't change it. And that's the way it should be now. He's right. But he says there's too many gray areas. Like, and I agree. Last year, the league took a step backwards. Whew. The Kelvin Benjamin thing. And you know why it was? It's because Dean Blandino
walked away late.
And got a better job.
Late.
And
after they changed the rules.
And he was the guy who had been doing it. And I think it's smart for the league to do this. They have one guy that makes every call that's controversial. And so that way, at least it's consistent. He sees every play and sees it the same way. He's going to call it the same. He remembers how this play went. He says, you got to call this one this way. I like that. But there's no question it didn't go that way last year. That Kelvin Benjamin catch should have been a catch.
And the Steelers game, right? The end zone, goal line Steelers play.
Yeah. Well, that's you know what,
one they
though,
admitted
I,
was
yeah,
wrong.
Did they admit that was wrong?
Yeah.
Or did they just say that that would be a catch this year
they
under the new rules?
They said it would be a catch this year.
Well, see, that didn't say that wasn't wrong last year. That's the whole problem. That's the whole
It wasn't
problem.
The official's problem. It was the rule problem.
It was a rule problem yes. last year. It wasn't right. the official. He called it the way it should have been called, but the way you got to call it stunk.
Right. They changed that.
Yeah. Now we're neck deep in that rabbit hole again. You start talking about it. It's like, no, I didn't mean that, you know. Oh, gosh.
A replay is the problem I maintain, and that's the rule I would change in the NFL, eliminate replay from use in officiating the game. But what do you think? Give us a call. We got a couple of lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Ken M. tweets in, face mask, with a couple of exclamation points. If a defender just touches the offensive player's mask, there is a face mask penalty, but running backs, wide receivers can put their hands on the mask doing a stiff arm. It's not fair. Anybody touches the mask gets a penalty.
Yeah, they take the stiff arm out of the game.
Right.
Which is, you know, maybe it helps defenders, no question about it. Yeah, that's no question. You could do that, and I don't think that would affect the game that much, except for the stiff arm would go away. Here's one from MC, and this is an interesting one to me. It's about special teams. What about if you're able to take a kickoff in the end zone, and you have the ability to throw the football down the field? That would stop the guys from running full all the way down the field because you got to cover some. If you had like 10 eligible receivers on your team and you could throw it once forward from the end zone, so the guy catch it in the end zone and he could stay in the end zone as long as he's in the end zone, he can throw it down the field as far as he wants or wherever he wants, and that would be up to the coverage team to cover those guys. Instead of getting through them to block, they could cover them.
I kind of like the sound of that.
Yeah, I do kind of do too. But what happens if it's incomplete? Then it's like, then you got to make them pay for that. You got to make the receiving team pay for that. So it's like first and 10 on the 10.
Why not the 20, 25? Well,
yeah, well.
I like that idea. Can you imagine what that would do for kickoffs? It would open things up. Now, would there be more? You know what it would, I'm guessing, again, off the top of my head here, instead of teams, coverage, kick cover teams running down there and lighting everybody up, they'd have to be played a little more conservatively, right? Somebody might be going up for a pass. We might have to cover a little bit here.
That would be front yard football right there, man. That is like that is street
ball.
I kind of
like the sound of that.
It would be fun. MC.
MC. I kind of like the sound of that. Right? I'm trying to think of potential drawbacks. Incomplete pass?
Well,
all right, take it at the 20 or the 15.
There's one
problem.
One problem is the whole kickoff return team would be filled with athletes. So you take all the big guys off of that group. They wouldn't do it. Plus, you'd have to have a guy back there with an arm, and he could pump fake, and then take off. And you would have to send a couple of guys down there to chase him, right?
Yeah.
You'd send some guys down there to chase him, because otherwise he'd stand back there for 15 seconds and wait for somebody to break open.
Yeah, you don't want that.
You don't want that.
You don't want it. You want to give him the option if he's going to throw it to kneel it down and take the touchback? I guess so. Why not, right?
Well, yeah, but here's the thing, though. What's in it?
Nobody's open. I'm going to kneel down.
What's in it for the coverage team? Would you surprise them? You don't want your guy to do if they're good at it. If you don't, what are you going to kick it out of bounds? You don't want them to have that opportunity. What, you know, maybe it becomes so easy to score or get good field position with the pass that you don't want to kick it to them anymore.
Potential interception. What do you do with pass interference on that play?
Yeah, that's a good question too.
it's an interesting idea, though. I think it'd be really fun to watch. Yeah. That's what they should do in preseason, that kind of a rule. That'd be really fun to watch. You got to stay in your end zone, right? Throw it out. Now, you're not –
you either have to stay or return it like normal.
Right. You're probably going to get a decent play. I mean, the object would be move it beyond the 25-yard line, right?
Right.
Can I get beyond the 25 with this pass?
Well, that's
a big pass play.
Well, here's the thing.
What do you, yeah.
That was my idea, because then if he doesn't get past the 25-yard line, you got this – prevalent chance for a big play, and he stays back there. If he doesn't complete it, I think you penalize him. Like with a field position, like say
with
it's
worst
first,
field position.
Yeah, yeah, like it's first and 10 on the 10 or the 15 or the 5, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or the 20 instead of the 25. You know, it costs you 5 yards.
Now, you've been on kick return teams, and you can answer this probably better than anybody. So you've got one of these plays called, but all of a sudden the kick isn't right, isn't where what you think it's going to do. How could you switch out of that? In other words, you go from, we've got to return this
when you,
as opposed to we're going to throw
like
he
squibs it. Well, yeah. And it doesn't get to the end zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to block them up because you got guys covering it. In fact, a lot of teams might do that, squib it down there short and slow, or not short, but, you know, inside the 15 or 10 and slow roll and get guys racing down there to get it. And then you're back in not really. It's a riot. It's chaos.
I like it.
It's chaos.
I like it, MC. Thanks for sending that in. Here's a call from Jim in Lakeview. Jim, you got a rule change proposal for us?
I have two, actually.
Okay.
And the first one, the general philosophy of the NFL on penalties is the yardage that's penalized should be consumed with the penalty. For instance, pass interference is a point of contact because the assumption is if there wasn't the penalty, the guy would have caught it right there.
Right.
So let me take this to holding. Okay, holding on a pass play is a 10-yard penalty because, in general, a quarterback gets sacked. It's about a 10-yard loss. What I would propose is that holding on a clear running play should just be a 5-yard penalty. When you, very few runs are thrown for more than a 5-yard loss. And these penalties, these 10-yard penalties on a running play just, A, kill a drive, and, B, half the time you look at it and you think, geez, that call could have been made any time. So I really think they should distinguish the yardage. On a run play, a holding should be 5 yards. Passing should be 10 yards.
Jim, before you get to your second point, let's discuss that. Stay on the line. I like that idea a lot, Stephen. He's right. A 10-yard holding penalty on an innocuous first-round run is a drive killer. The rest of the drive essentially does not count. If you manage to make a first down out of that, you are defying the odds.
You're looking at first and 20.
Yeah. I like that a lot. 5 yards on a run play.
Problem is that it has always been, and you can get around this or not, but if the quarterback never throws, if you get a holding penalty and the quarterback gets sacked, it wasn't a pass. It was a run.
Yeah.
Well, no. When it's clearly – when the, of course, the –
What if your quarterback – then, Jim, what if your quarterback rolls out?
The penalty can never be assessed 5 yards if the quarterback is hit. It only has to do with the running back. The ball is handed off. On a run, that's the only time that 5-yard rule comes into effect.
I like that.
It doesn't matter whether a quarterback keeps it or if it's a quarterback, it's always 10 yards.
Kind of like that.
So what if Yeah, I mean, I'm just playing devil's advocate. You know, so what if a team has a quarterback on the field, but they snap the ball in a wildcat formation, and it's a running play designed for that? I mean, it's and so anytime the ball is run and there's a holding penalty, you're saying it's just a 5-yard penalty. It's, okay, all right. That sounds all right. I haven't had a hard time poking a hole in it.
The only other potential drawback I would see, Jim, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, I believe that officials might be more apt to call holding if they knew the penalty wasn't as severe. You agree?
Well, I hope that's not the case, Sean. I hope, and both my proposals are really designed to minimize the impact that referees have on the game.
Good.
Obviously, you know, the impact of a 5-yard penalty versus a 10-yard penalty is huge, especially when the holding penalty is so arbitrary.
Yeah,
Jim, that's a good call. That's a good point. I think that's an excellent thing because you're right. The crux of the problem with a lot of these in the defensive pass interference and the offensive holding is that the penalty is too egregious for what the consequence of the penalty would have been had it not happened. So you can have an offensive hold away from the ball on a sweep to the right and the guy's holding out on the left and they call that. Those are the kind of things that, you know, the penalty is just too penalizing. The result
punitive.
Is too punitive to
punitive.
To make it worth it. And you're right. There, and any of these rule changes, anytime you do this, there is an adjustment period, not just for the players, but also for the officials. So they'd have to learn when they see it to throw it and not hold on to it because they don't want to set a team back 10 yards because of an innocuous hold on the backside of a run play.
What's your second proposal, Jim?
My second one, and this might be up Steve's alley, but a team that's punting, if they punt the ball and the ball is clearly punted out of bounds or the other team calls for a fair catch, if there is a holding call on that play, the referee should pick up the flag because the holding had no effect on the play. The ball is kicked clearly out of bounds. It doesn't matter if they held every single guy. It was unfieldable. And if the guy calls for a fair catch, the holding had no effect on that as well. Again, a rule to minimize the impact. You know, the worst thing, a team kicks the ball, it kicks the ball clearly out of bounds, and then they got to take a 10-yard penalty for holding when that hold had nothing to do with where the ball should be.
We got a guy
well,
sitting
that's
right
true.
Here who
and
made
that,
a living
and I agree.
Punts.
If the holding happens after the kick, yeah, I don't have a problem with that. But what happens if, you know, you're talking about, you know, obviously after the kick and the kick is away, then something happens on the return where the return team thinks it might be returned and they're holding, that's, yeah, I see that. But, you know, you have to do that after the kick because what happened is the punt team would just grab these guys and hold them so they couldn't give up a block kick and have him kick it out of bounds so that the return team has no recourse in that play at all. They can not affect that play at all because, one, they were held without having a chance to block it, and, two, no chance to return the play anyway.
Jim, let me ask Steve a question about this. You've done this. You've returned punts. When is the decision made, fair catch signal or not? Because that would impact, right? If it's too early, then yeah, Jim's point is right. If it's early, but if you're waiting, can I feel this? Do I have a chance? What's my blocking look like? When do you make the decision, fair catch or not? How quickly does
when
that
you
come?
Just at the moment when you decide I'm not going to catch this and return it? I mean, it could happen at any point. It could happen, you know, when he wobbles it out and it flies 10 yards and bounces the rest of the 30-yard net punt, or when it's a high punt and you can tell by the hang time that you're not going to have time to catch it and run with it because the hang time is just too great and they're going to be around you. Or it could be when the kick takes you to a place where your peripheral vision tells you there's a guy there and you don't know, you take a glance and you don't think he's going to get blocked at the time you're catching it, so you can't call a fair catch then. So, yeah, it could happen early or late depending on the circumstances.
That would impact what Jim's proposing, I would think, right?
The fair catch signal
well, yeah.
or not?
Yeah, the fair catch signal, when
well,
it comes, like,
well,
you want to hold a guy or
the
not?
The first thing he said was when it's clearly out of bounds.
Oh, out of bounds, I get that part.
Yeah, so it, yeah.
But the fair catch, I don't know.
The fair catch would throw a wrench into it because if the guy fair catches it, and like if you don't know this, if your return man calls for a fair catch and the kick is short and one of your guys who's running down there sees it, can catch it, the fair catch counts for him too. So he can't advance it. But then by the same token, if he catches it, he can't turn it over either. He can't give up the fumble. So all of that goes into the mix there, and it's – and I get it. a late holding call on a ball that got kicked out of bounds, yeah, I'd love to do away with that. But that's it becomes at a point where there are certain times where you're not going to be able to make that call because the decision isn't made early enough in the play.
Rules changes. What do you think? Owners will vote on them next week. Let's hear yours. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Steve and I back in a moment. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. We're just mowing down segments here. John Murphy and Steve Tasker, One Bills Live. Just mowing them down, Steve. This is what we do all week, every day, Monday through Friday, noon to 3. Thanks for tuning in on the radio side on WGR Sports Radio 550 in Buffalo. Or on the television side on MSG.
Stringing segments together. Yeah, the biggest thing we've had in our Twitter poll today is what rule change would you make in the NFL? And, you know, by and large, it's the defensive pass interference because they don't like your defender making a great play, putting his hand on the guy's hip for one stride and giving up a 40-yard play as a penalty rather than making a good defensive play. And then they never call that on offense. Oh, my gosh. I mean, right?
Rarely.
They rarely call that on the offensive player. So that's the big winner in today's Twitter poll about which rule you would like to change. But the fun part about this has been people chiming in saying, hey, I think we should be able to throw the football out of the end zone on a kickoff, which we've been bouncing that one around. It's been fun.
Mike in Tonawanda on the line with a suggestion. Mike, go ahead.
North Tonawanda, guys.
North Tonawanda.
Go ahead, man.
My bad.
Okay, I'm ready. Okay, the rule change I would make is simple. No more rule changes. The NFL is paying the price with declining television ratings because of that and because of the on-field antics of idiots that act like fools after they make a play. Okay?
I don't know that – let me just interrupt you for a second, Mike. I don't know that rules changes – I guess I can interrupt you.
Jack Lambert was right. I saw a Monday Night Football game when Terry Bradshaw was playing. They started to protect the quarterbacks, and they asked Jack, what do you think about it? And Jack said, I think they ought to put dresses on them all. Yeah. Okay.
Jack who?
Lambert. He was playing in the 70s. Don't treat the symptom.
Let's read the script.
Concerned about injuries. Damn it. A concussion was like a jersey of pride to wear. It was a wound of pride for guys like me. I'm so angry about it. It's getting me frustrated.
I guess so, yeah.
I want to clear my head so I can finish what I'm saying.
Keep reading.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm
just reading this. I got to interrupt you, Mike. I'm sorry.
Guys,
he's reading the script or something. He's reading points. Look, right from the outset, no, I don't think rules changes have anything to do with declining television ratings. No, I don't believe that.
That's one thing
Let me finish.
Okay, go ahead. I also
don't believe that concussions are good, like it's a badge of pride to get a concussion. No. Nobody thinks that. Who thinks that, Mike?
Here's the thing.
Nobody thinks that.
I think that's a little bit obvious. You can't belittle an injury to another human being. That's a bad injury?
Come right. On,
secondly, I got to disagree with Mike actually 180 degrees because he thinks that the rule changes have detracted from the game. Let me just tell you something. There's three reasons why the NFL is the 800-pound gorilla on the American sports landscape. One is the owners share the revenue. Every team, Green Bay, which is a city of 100,000 people, can compete with New York City, a city of 11 million people. Those two teams can compete on an even playing field because the teams share the wealth. There's not rich franchise or poor franchise that make it economically impossible for you to compete. That's rule number one. That's the thing number one that makes it a great game. The second thing is that they change the rules every year. That's what has made the league better because fans ask for, wow, that was great. Let's get more of that. So the league will tweak the rules so that the fans get more of what they want. And then when they go along and they say, oh, look at this over here. We like more return to yardage. Well, they tweak the rules to make sure they get more of that. They say, listen, we're so sick of the extra point being such a gimme. I want to change. So they move it back. They change the rules because of that. Changing the rules in the National Football League has added to the rules consistently over decade, over decade, over decade, over decade. You look back at the league back in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and some of the stuff that goes on there is an atrocity by today's standards. The game has gotten better and better and better, not worse because of the rule changes. So they're going to keep changing the rules because they give the fan a chance. They give the league a chance to give the fans more of what they want. So there's the revenue sharing, there's the league rule changes, and now the thing also that makes the game compelling to watch and makes it the 800-pound gorilla is the fact that it's played by phenomenal athletes in the most intense atmosphere possible. They got everything on the line, and it is very, very complicated. There's a lot of things that go into winning in an organization, and it appeals to people's intellect. You have to have a great roster. You have to have star players. You have to have a great coaching staff. You have to have ownership that knows what they're doing. Your stadium needs to be right. Your everything. Your uniforms have to look right. I mean, there's so many things on every – so many layers that go into a winning franchise. People love every aspect about it. That's why the NFL is the 800-pound gorilla. Rule changes are not the problem. They have what has been as – they have been the reason the league has grown and grown and grown and grown.
We're almost out of time here, but what atrocities do you have in mind from old school NFL?
Go back, look at, like, on YouTube, 1970s, Raiders against the Chiefs, some of the extra stuff after the whistle, some of the guys getting sacked with headshots, clotheslining guys, the head slap that happened on pass rushers when Deacon Jones would rush the passer, he would slap the side of their head with his open hand. Concussions. Okay. I mean, it's just one thing after another. The league was – it was a little bit renegade because we didn't know. Nobody knew back then. And guys were perfectly willing to do it. So the way the league has gotten more disciplined about the protection of the players and the league and the rule changes that both enhance the game's appearance and enhance player safety, they've made the game better, not worse.
There's a book. I can't remember.
Let me climb down off my soapbox.
Yeah, that was serious. There's
Sorry
a book,
about
but we had an author on
I
the
don't mean
show.
To get serious on you.
We had an author on a book. I can't remember the name of the book about the 1970s, the NFL in the 1970s.
Listen, you look at some of that it stuff. They don't show it on NFL films anymore.
The book was I can't forget.
Some of the NFL film stuff they show back, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? It's unbelievable, the physicality of the game. And, you know, you can say, well, that's what made the game great. I mean, no. That ain't it. That's not what made the game great. Making the game great was watching guys run up and down the field, making throws, making catches, making runs, breaking tackles. Not catching a quarterback blindsided. Although, you know, all of us have that kind of that NASCAR thing where you want to see a wreck. I get that. But it's, you know, the game's so much more than that now, and I think it's better for it.
All right. Steve, on the soapbox. We'll be back. Back with more in a moment, including Judy Batista from NFL.com. She's going to those owners' meetings. We'll talk with her about some of these rule change proposals. She works for NFL.com and the NFL Network. Judy Batista up next. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
Update from One Bills Drive. Bills rookies here today as the rookie development program continues. The veterans off until Monday. They'll be back for one more day of the off-season conditioning program. Then they get to OTAs, organized team activities, rookies and veterans next Tuesday. That's where they can start doing offense versus defense. We'll talk more about that next week. Stanley Cup hockey tonight. The Winnipeg Jets are in Las Vegas to play the Golden Knights, Game 4 of the Western Conference Finals. The Jets, and they'll face off at 8 o'clock tonight. It's 2-1. The Jets on top of the Vegas, rather, leads the Western Conference Final 2-1. In the East, last night, Tampa Bay beat the Washington Capitals 4-2 in Game 4 of that series. That series tied up at 2 wins apiece. Now the road teams won every game. They'll play Game 5 tomorrow night in Tampa. Philadelphia Eagles and the NFL are going to celebrate their Super Bowl victory at the White House. The date is set for June 15th. The invitation extended in late April, and the Eagles will go there June 5th. Seattle Seahawks have signed their fifth-round draft pick linebacker Shaquem Griffin to a 4-year contract. He is the player who lost his left hand at age 4 because of a rare condition before birth. He'll join his brother, cornerback Shaquille Griffin, on the Seahawks roster. The deal worth $2.8 million over 4 years and includes about $300,000 guaranteed. And baseball, the Buffalo Bisons home to take advantage of this good weather tonight. Bisons home against Scranton Wilkes-Barre tonight, 7:05, first pitch at the downtown ballpark. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. The NFL owners, we've talked about it all day, getting set to meet next week in Atlanta. Rules changes on the agenda, and the NFL Network reporter who's covered that extensively joins us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. We are very happy to have NFL.com columnist, NFL Network reporter, Judy Batista on the line with us. Judy, it's John Murphy and Steve Tasker in Buffalo. We thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. How you doing, guys?
We're doing great.
Doing great. Thanks for coming on.
We've been banging around different rule change ideas, but it looks like the main order of business down there next week is going to be kickoffs, right? Changing the way kickoffs look.
Yeah. In terms of the rules, I think the kickoff is the big one. Steve was there at the meeting. I was there, too, when they had a whole bunch of special teams coaches, some head coaches, members of the competition committee, to a meeting at the league headquarters a few weeks back. And they sort of hashed out ideas for how to make the kickoff safer. It is by far the most dangerous play in the game. And so they're trying to make some changes because I don't think anybody wants to get rid of the kickoff entirely. I think everybody would like to keep it a part of the game, but they feel it is simply too dangerous to keep it the way it is. So there are going to be some tweaks made, and I fully expect these are going to pass easily.
Yeah, and Judy, you got the same sense that I did. They were really interested in keeping it up. And in the run-up to the meetings, they were like, you know, we will get rid of it if we have to. But then I'd like your point of view on this. They put it right in the hands of the special teams coaches to say, okay, what needs to be done? And it was interesting. I mentioned this on the show when I came back. Their recommendations seem to exactly address what the data from the from what the consultants said their data, you know, knew. Because so the guys, what I'm saying is the coaches who coach it and watch all this film on it made changes that directly addressed what the problems were.
Yeah, because let's be honest, I think the special teams coaches know maybe better than anybody, except for perhaps the players on the special teams unit themselves. They know what the danger is in the play. They know where the problem spots are. And look, they obviously have a vested interest in trying to keep the kickoff in the game. I don't think anybody wants to see the kickoff go. So they're sort of under the gun here. I mean, they have to make changes. The league has been very clear, even with these changes, if they don't see a marked decline in the number of head injuries suffered on kickoffs, they're going to go back to the drawing board, and eventually that could lead to getting rid of the kickoff entirely. So I think they all went into that meeting understanding there need to be substantive changes to the kickoff. And the ones that are going to be voted on and that I expect to be improved are pretty big ones, right? I mean, there's not going to be any wedges allowed anymore. You were allowed to have a two-man wedge. That's going to completely be gone. And there's not going to be any running start for the kicking team, right? I mean, old school, you used to see the running start. And there won't be any of that. And the whole idea here is to have more space on the play and less speed, because those are the two things that combine for those huge head-on collisions. And they just feel like they've got to get those out of the game. One little detail that I found fascinating from that meeting was when they said they were even seeing those big hits and the big injuries that result even on touchbacks. So on plays that we all think of as being a dead play, a touchback, that wasn't necessarily the case. The guys on the kickoff teams and the coverage teams were still getting hit hard. And so I think the idea here is try to get as many of those big hits out of the play as they can. And again, if they don't see a substantial decrease in the number of injuries, they're going to look at this again and again until they get it down to where they want it. And if that means that they have to get rid of the kickoff entirely, I certainly think that that's a possibility down the road.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I kind of maybe disagree with you a little bit, Judy. I don't think they can possibly, and I know that they will tweak it and try and get it right, and they'll try again and again. I don't think they can ever afford to really do away with it because, I mean, if you know this, once you get rid of the kickoff, the next thing is, well, what's the most dangerous play after that? And then they start working on that. And the problem is they go down a slippery slope, and pretty soon they're not playing football anymore, which is, kind of jokingly, everybody says that now. Well, it's not the NFL I grew up with. You know, they don't want to go down that road too far.
I agree with you, except I was struck by one thing. I think it was Rich McKay who told us this. Like, on a kickoff, players are five times more likely to suffer a concussion on the kickoff than they are on a regular play from scrimmage. That, to me, is such a stark difference in the injury numbers that they are under great pressure to do something about it. I agree with you. I don't think anybody wants the kickoff out of the game. But I think that if they get to a point where it's not making a substantial difference, these rules changes, I think you're going to see them have to take dramatic action, because I think what alarmed them so much was last year the concussion numbers went up. They had sort of been declining over the past few years, and they went up, and I think that really alarmed them because they think they thought that they had reversed that trend. So that really spurred a lot of this action. That spurred this action and the helmet rule that's going to go in, too.
Judy, I got to be honest, before the meeting that Steve went to a couple of weeks ago, the one you attended as well, when Mark Murphy of the Packers basically had an or else thing, like if we don't fix this, kickoffs will be gone, I almost, after the meeting, I'm almost leaning towards saying, this is it. This is the last gasp for kickoffs. If it, as you say, if this doesn't fix it, they might just pull the rug out, you know, next year even. What do you think?
Well, I think they're going to give this a chance to see if the numbers come down. I think there are a few other things they could do. You know, they could go to a little bit more sort of towards the college rule, which is even more down the road than this. So I think there's still a little bit of wiggle room here. But look, I mean, Troy Vincent and Rich McKay all said the same thing at the end of that meeting with the special teams coaches a few weeks ago. They said, like, this is everything's on a short leash. They're going to look at this after next season. And if they're not getting this sort of substantial reduction in head injuries that they hope and expect from these changes, they're going to go back to the drawing board and make more changes. And you're going to get to a point, I agree with what Steve just said, you're going to get to a point where there's nothing else they can do, right?
Yeah.
So they're
yeah.
either going to have to decide, are you satisfied with the progress you've made and this is enough progress, or are you not satisfied? You know, are you not seeing enough reduction in injuries? And if there are enough people who think they have not reduced the injuries enough, you know, they're going to face a big decision. Again, I don't think anybody wants the kickoff to go away, but I do think there are people in the league who are open to that idea if the numbers don't come down significantly.
We're on One Bills Live with Judy Batista, NFL.com columnist and NFL Network reporter on One Bills Live. Judy, we can go on and on about this kickoff stuff, and but I really want to talk to you about, you're going down to the NFL meetings in Atlanta this week. I really think you can say what you want about how important we all think kickoff is, but there's one topic that is overriding everything, and it is the Supreme Court lifting the ban on sports betting and leaving it to all the states. I think that's got to be the number one thing on the agenda for these meetings. What are you hearing about what's going to happen?
Well, they're certainly going to discuss that. They've discussed this. They discussed this at the March meeting, the big annual meeting, because this, you know, this ruling was not a surprise. I think, you know, everybody sort of expected that the Supreme Court was going to go in this direction. So the league has been preparing for this. My colleague Ian Rappaport had reported a few months ago that the league had quietly prepared a study about what this would mean. So there's no question this is going to be a big topic of conversation, not just now, but going forward, you know, as the states start moving on this. You know, I think there are a few topics like this that are going to dominate the conversation. I think that, you know, the legalized sports gambling, certainly I think the national anthem is going to be another topic that they hash over at this meeting, in addition to the rules changes. But look, gambling, I think, is going to be a huge topic for quite a while now, because this is, you know, it's sort of going to be phased in as states go towards it and you know, make their own laws. We're going to have to see not just how the NFL reacts, but, I mean, what do the other leagues do? You know, I mean, the NFL and the other leagues' official position was to not want the Supreme Court to allow legalized sports gambling, but let's not kid anybody. There's a lot of money to be made here. Now that it's going to be legal, there's a lot of money to be made. And the question is, how do the leagues, you know, get their cut of that?
Judy Batista from NFL Network on the line with us. I wonder if this issue comes up, Judy. You touched on it a minute ago. I don't even like to call it an anthem protest, but pregame protests by players, and especially when you've got grievances filed now by the likes of Colin Kaepernick and I think Eric Reed filed a grievance, right? Does there come a point when owners have to discuss this, even if somebody records the conversation and releases a transcript a couple of months later? What do you think?
Well, it's going to be discussed. There's no question about it. You know, they have a decision to make. The decision is, do they need a blanket rule one way or the other, a policy one way or the other going into next season? I don't get the sense that there is any consensus among owners about the need for a policy, A, or what that policy should look like, B. So they are not near a consensus right now. But certainly there are some owners who think there has to be some kind of policy, something, just to govern what everybody does in case, you know, players protest again. But, you know, there's a real sense the league does not want to tell players you must stand for the national anthem. They just do not want to take that step. So with that in mind, is there sort of a compromise solution that they just leave it to each team to do it as they choose to do it? And that would mean that some teams would tell their players you have to stand. Some teams might tell their players, if you're on the sideline, we would like you to stand for the national anthem. But if you do not want to stand for the national anthem, that's fine. But please remain in the locker room. You know, each team could come up with their own solution. I don't know how viable that is long term as a solution, but there's certainly a sense, at least among some owners that I've talked to, that they have to come out of this with some sort of idea of how to go forward once the season starts. Things have sort of quieted down a little bit. Obviously, they're out of season now.
Right.
But even at the end of last season, when the owners engaged with the Players Coalition and committed a great deal of money to some of the social justice initiatives that the players had earmarked, things sort of quieted down. The tension sort of went down a little bit, and fewer players were protesting. But nobody knows what to expect going forward. It's hard to say. And I think everybody is leery about starting a season without having some kind of resolution.
Yeah, they need a plan, especially, you know, I think with midterm elections coming up and the possibility for somebody to use that as a wedge. I mean, I think they need a plan, right? A league-wide plan.
Right. That's what they don't want, I think, is exactly what happened last year when it first blew up, is they don't want to be caught flat-footed,
right?
I mean, they just don't want to be caught unprepared for whatever
it might be. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword, because if the NFL says, hey, you got to stand for the national anthem, then they're almost being un-American and not allowing people to express their free opinion. Right. And now it's also reactionary. They don't, you know, so they can't really come off of this looking good with some sort of policy change.
Here's the bind that they're in. They don't want to provoke players, right? They certainly don't want to do that. And I think, you know, I think people in the league office and a good number of owners feel they don't want to tell the players you must stand. They just don't think that's the proper thing to do. They respect their right to protest. But the bind that they're in is there are some owners who are quite concerned about the business fallout. Is this affecting business? Is it making advertisers and sponsors nervous? You know, they're hearing from a portion of their fan base that's very upset when players don't stand for the national anthem. We know that, you know, the president really lashed into the NFL last fall. So they are caught trying to walk this fine line. They don't want to provoke players. They don't want to provoke the president. But they, you know, they also don't want angry fans, right? I mean, they're in the business of making their fans happy, and so they are really walking a fine line here, trying to figure out what to do.
Judy Batista from NFL.com, and one final question for me, Judy. And one more topic about the NFL owners. Do you see any snag or any backlash, or maybe positives, or what is there to say about the Carolina ownership change down in Charlotte? It seemed like an easy transition, and everybody's got to be happy about a $2.2 billion price tag.
Yeah, this is the owner that they wanted, David Tepper, who is a Miami-based hedge fund manager. They wanted him for a few reasons. First of all, because he is worth an estimated $11 billion. So this is going to be an all-cash transaction, which obviously makes things much easier. The NFL doesn't have to worry about the financing of it. The other part of it is he owned a small share. He owned 5% of the Pittsburgh Steelers, which he bought in 2009. So he has already gone through the vetting process of the NFL. So they didn't have to do that. That makes for a much easier, more seamless transition. And I think under the circumstances, the reason the Panthers are for sale, because Jerry Richardson is under investigation for workplace misconduct allegations, especially under those circumstances, I think the NFL wanted a fast resolution and a seamless resolution. They did not want this to drag out past this meeting, and they wanted an owner that they knew was rock solid and that would get through the vetting very quickly. And that's what they've got. And so I think that's why you saw him prevail. The $2.2 billion is a record price for an NFL franchise, but he was not the high bidder. There was a bidder who was higher, but David Tepper prevailed for those reasons I just explained, because he was the easy one to get through.
I didn't know that. Hey, Judy, thanks. We'll follow you next week when you're reporting from the meetings. We appreciate your time today. Thank you very much.
Always great to talk to you guys. Thanks.
Judy Batista, NFL.com columnist and NFL Network reporter. She'll be there in Atlanta at the meetings starting next week. Judy joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. So they didn't take the highest bid for the Panthers. I guess I'm surprised by that. But
I'm really surprised by that. I mean, isn't that the
idea?
I'm surprised
that $2.4 billion isn't the highest bid.
$2.2 billion. And who was the guy who got snapped off? That's who I want to know.
You mentioned it. I do recall reading something about this. It's the guy they didn't want.
Listen, it's not like you can just show up with the money, obviously.
They're pre-screened.
If you can show up with the all-cash asking price of
$2 billion.
Maybe they didn't like the financing options for the other guy in the high bid.
You know, one thing we didn't ask you about, but I think it's been reported that, you know how they moved the draft around? Dallas this past year, it's been to Philadelphia, it's been to Chicago. It's going to be in Nashville, I believe, and that'll also be approved at the owner's meeting. It's scheduled to be approved next week.
I remember when I did Bill's game in Nashville. I don't know if I was the analyst on that or a sideline guy. Man, oh, man, did the Bills fans flock to Nashville.
Yeah. Great city.
Yeah, it's a fun city.
Yep.
It'll be fun. But a lot of stuff going on in the owners' meetings coming up, and they're going to talk about the rule changes, and we're talking to you out there about the rule changes, the kickoff stuff, or what rule would you change, or what rule would you add to the kitty if you were commissioner of the NFL and had the owners' ears, what would you do?
Give us a call on that, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-552-550. What rule would you like to see added, subtracted, altered, changed? We'll talk more about that when we come back. Maybe get a chance to do a little NFL true or false when we come back. We got stuff to talk about the Cowboys, right, T.O.? I know you got a special place in your heart for Terrell Owens.
I never met him.
Steve and I coming back in a moment. One Bills live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show, One Bills Live. John Murphy and Steve Tasker from our One Buffalo studio. We've touched a lot of bases today, and we'll continue to do that in the time remaining, including rules changes. We talked to Judy Batista of NFL Network about that. And the NFL owners are meeting in Atlanta next week when they're going to change some of those rules. If you have any thoughts, now's the time. Last call for rules changes. We're not going to send it to the owners. They won't listen to us. We got a couple things to talk about. I want to talk about this, and it's not a big thing, Steve, but this got my attention. You know, this is the time of year when teams are signing their draft picks. The draft was 2 weeks ago?
Three weeks? Yes. Today it would be 3 weeks.
3 weeks? Yeah, 3 weeks ago, the draft. Yeah. And teams, you know, have their rookie minicamps. They're signing draft picks, except for the Los Angeles Rams. Only two teams have yet to sign a draft pick. And the Rams have done this for a while. It's not just a tradition. It's a strategy. I never knew this. But the Rams, even when they were in St. Louis, the Rams make it a point to not sign a draft pick for a while. The Dolphins are the other team. I don't know what their position is. The Rams wait until after June 1st to sign their rookies. The Dolphins wait till after June 1st. The Rams, the reason they do this, they wait to sign the rookies in order to educate them financially before handing over the signing bonus. These players are getting $400,000 signing bonuses. And the Rams make the rookies go through some financial education about life in the NFL, about what to do with your money, how to invest your money, before they sign them to a contract. There's no real pressure to sign them before you get to camp, let's face it. Bills have signed all but two of theirs, I believe. I kind of like that, though. It shows, look, the Rams are showing that it's their money. They can do with it what they want, but we're going to make sure that they are fully armed to do the best things with their money once we hand them that big check, and I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're making an effort to help these guys out.
Yeah.
And everywhere you go at some point, and when I travel around, people find that out, and this topic comes up. They're always saying, why don't they do something for these guys to help it? Listen, they do. But a lot of these guys, you know – have people in their lives that they trust more than the people they work for, the team or whatever who drafts them. They, you know, they've got things they've always wanted to do with the money. And you're not going to talk them out of it. They've
got, we did that the other day. What'd you
they've
do
got
with your
signing bonus? Yeah, they've got responsibilities they want to live up to. I think it's now become part of their run up to the draft when they choose representation. When these guys, the agents are like, because that as sleazy and as snake oil like as we like to think the agent business is, there's a lot of these guys that do a really nice job, and they're out for the best interests of their clients, and they're there to help these guys, and they're just, you know, they want to make a living doing it, obviously, but they do help these guys. But to see the clubs make a concerted effort and to say, we're not going to sign you until, listen, here's some things you need to know about having money for the first time in your life, and it's an eye-opener for a lot of those guys, I'm sure.
I've been around here a while, but I recall instances where players had, this was the first money they'd ever had, you know, when they're 21, 22 years old coming to an NFL team, didn't know how to open a bank account, didn't know how to open how to write checks. You must have come across players like that, right? Never written a check before, never had a checking account.
They don't even know what a check looks like.
Right.
Everything they do in their whole life is cash. That's not just in this sport. That's in every sport. I got a couple of stories I can't even tell on the air about how egregious these players, how ill-prepared they were to get a large amount of money, a particularly large amount of money on a regular basis, and what they thought they should do with it, how they handled it. There's players in the league who had an idea about what to do with their money that just, you know, had no basis in reality.
Yeah.
I mean, they were.
I don't know why I'm laughing.
Yeah, it's true.
No basis in reality.
Because they have no concept of, you know, of who, like, they see the financial industry as the same light as you do some stranger on the street. They think you can't trust people who are professionals any more than you can trust a guy on the street. So they don't give their money to professionals who make their living, you know, handling their money. So. You know, that leaves you with a short list of people who you're going to give your money to, and it's bad in some places. In some places, it's really bad, and so, you know, to see a team say, "Listen, whoa," you know, to give them some solid advice, and let's face it, you're talking about the Los Angeles Rams. Stan Kroenke knows how to handle money.
Yeah,
right. So. It's to give those guys just a little bit of heads up about what's going to happen to them is probably a pretty smart idea.
Like that. Like to read that.
That doesn't mean it's going to work on all of them, but at least they make a real effort to do it.
We came across this. We talked about Terrell Owens a little bit yesterday. T.O., former Buffalo Bill, obviously going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this year. T.O. is public now. He wants to play again. He's 44 years old, 16 seasons, 6 Pro Bowl appearances. He's going in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Wants to play again. He appeared on a Dallas radio station and not only talked about that, but also took some shots at Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett. Listen in. This is what Terrell Owens said on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas.
When you really look at it, it doesn't make sense for Jason Garrett to continue to have his job, not really making any, not really expanding or not really progressing with the organization, even as a team. Under his coaching tenure there. And you look at let's bring up basketball for a second. Here you have Dwayne Casey of the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah.
This guy voted unanimous, you know, coach of the year, has taken Toronto to the playoffs, 3 straight years or whatever, had 3 straight years of winning 50 plus games, and then they don't make it, you know, beyond where they what the expectations are within that organization. And he gets fired. And then you have Jason Garrett, who has no accomplishments, not even close to that. And he continues to still have a job. And it all boils down to him being the scapegoat and having players being the scapegoat for his inability to lead the team as he should. For me, it's mind-boggling. I don't understand it. And I think Jerry, again, he's the owner. At the end of the day, he has to be, you know, he has to be feel good with himself about the decisions, but I just don't understand why this guy still has a job.
T.O., mind-boggling, Jason Garrett is still employed. Look, say what you want about Terrell Owens, Steve, and he is overly flashy, obviously. He calls attention to himself. He makes a point. Jason Garrett has dodged some bullets there and survived when many people thought he would not.
2 years ago, they were 12-4 with a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back. And nobody was calling for his head then.
They didn't do anything with that season, though.
But they had a rookie quarterback. They weren't even supposed to be there. I mean, that, you
that
know,
rookie
look,
quarterback
and,
won 12
and listen,
games.
Here's the thing, in my opinion, on Dallas. There's no question. I like Jason Garrett. I like him a lot. But let's face it. The number one job in Dallas is not to coach the Dallas Cowboys. It's to handle Jerry. You got an owner, and I'm not insulting Jerry at all. Here's my opinion. Jerry knows what's going on. He is the most engaged NFL owner, one of the most engaged NFL owners there is. Now, you can make you can have fun with him about how he too close to it or all of that. There's not too many owners that put in the work for their team in a film room, in a draft room. Jerry cares about everything that goes on in that building. And as a head coach, you got to know that. And Jason Garrett does an outstanding job of working that relationship to its maximum. You can say what you want about Jerry Jones and all that, or Jason Garrett, but let me tell you something. Job one as a Dallas head coach is to have a relationship with Jerry Jones and make it work and get the football thing going. Sometimes aside from Jerry or in spite of Jerry or with, but it has to be with Jerry's blessing.
But if I'm a Cowboys fan, I don't care if the coach, you know, kowtows to the owner. I want wins. I want championships. They've had seasons. They've had good players, right? Well, if you're a Cowboys fan, what difference does it make to you if the coach knows, you know, where to rub the back of the owner, right?
Because
that's
most Dallas Cowboy fans realize that if you're going to get better as a football team, you don't fire Jason Garrett to get better. You got to fire Jerry Jones. That's not what's going to happen. Jerry has a lot of the responsibility there. He makes calls on. I mean, let's face it. I've been on the sidelines for a Monday night game in Dallas when Tony Romo was still playing. I remember he had the back issue. He left the game. He came back in the game. They're playing the Redskins. It's an interdivisional. He goes out. And I'm telling you what, it was like you could have done – listen, this is the truth. You could have done a nonfiction docudrama on just that Monday night football game when Tony Romo went down and when he came back in, just for me standing on the sidelines. It was unbelievable, the drama that happened and all the machinations that happened when he went down. Jerry Jones comes out of the owner's box.
Yeah.
He's down in the tunnel. Tony Romo goes off. He's televised walking down the tunnel, shown on the big screen. He goes into the room. Jerry goes into the room. They come back out. You got the doctors coming up and talking to Jason Garrett about, hey, we don't know if Terrell can go. Jason Garrett turns around and goes, and I read his lips. He goes, listen, is he in or not?
To Jerry Jones.
To the medical people. And the medical people are going, they're kind of looking at him, they're looking at him like it's not their call. They go back into the room. Then Jerry comes back out. He's on the sidelines. Then Tony comes back out on the sidelines. It was unbelievable, the drama. And you know, but by the way, they're losing the game to Brandon Weeden of the Washington Redskins. And who's going to – oh, my gosh, who's on? Nobody cared about the Cowboys on the field.
You're making the case that Jason – the support D.O. that Jason
Jerry,
Garrett –
Jason Garrett's got to deal with that. He's trying to coach the game, and nobody cares what's going on the field.
You're making the case to let Jason Garrett go.
He's the only guy that could have handled that whole situation. He is the only guy smart enough to know what happened with Tony – no, he's got a relationship with an owner who's really making the call. He has no say. Does Tony go back on? Tony comes back on, is trying to throw on the sidelines. Is he going to go? Is he not? And Jerry's over there talking to Tony. The owner, not Jason Garrett, not the medical people. You're telling me that has something to do with being an NFL head coach?
Listen, you just made me agree more with T.O. The fact that Jason Garrett is still the coach there
really?
Is mind-boggling.
Who's going to do a better job than that?
I don't know.
You're going to have Jerry's wife? Coach the Dallas Cowboys now?
You might as well.
I'm serious.
Well. Yeah.
That's what you're kind of talking about.
Yeah.
You're going to drop some guy who's outside that organization, who has no idea about what it's like to work in that environment, into there. There's no way. In fact, Jason Garrett may be so entrenched as Dallas Cowboys head coach because of his ability to walk that line that nobody will ever take that away. He's going to have to walk away. He's going to have to say, listen, I'm done.
Maybe you'll have to.
I think that's the scenario there now. And good for Jason Garrett working himself into that, because I'll tell you what, it ain't easy. Wow, I need a drink.
Take a break.
Take a water.
NFL true or false. NFL true or false, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Wow. You just made me agree with Terrell Owens. That's not easy to do.
See, and I don't agree with him.
I know you don't, but you made me agree. I think it's a dysfunctional situation. NFL True or False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. This one is bizarre. This came from an article written by Alex Kirshner on SBNation.com. NFL rivals, Bills, Dolphins, Bills, Patriots, should play once a year, not twice a year, once a year, like college football. He tries to make an argument of a 16-game schedule with three games against your divisional rivals, eight non-divisional conference game, five games against the other conference, and he says it would raise the importance of every divisional rivalry game. It would let more fan. It would let you see more teams during the course of a season, like college football. You know, Ohio State, Michigan, they don't play twice; they play once. So this guy says NFL teams should play once a season, like in college football. I say false.
So
absolutely false.
So a rivalry is just your division, is what he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
No, then there's no that. No, then it's not a division. It's just guys you happen to play.
Right. If you're playing them once, you're right. It's not a division.
Not a division. It's just the way the games fall. That's not, I'm false.
That's stupid. We're both false.
That's false.
How about this one? Terrell Suggs, great player, Baltimore Ravens. Suggs says he has yet to hit his peak in the National Football League. Here's his quote to the Baltimore Sun. To be totally honest with you, I don't see my peak in my near future, Suggs said. To answer your question, we're definitely going to be two major key parts of the leadership team on this team, Suggs and Joe Flacco. He said, we take that seriously, but he said he just turned 35. He had 11 sacks, Pro Bowl for the first time since 2013 last year, and Suggs says he has not hit his peak. True, false? I'm going to say false to that one too, Steve. He's 35 years old. I like Suggs. And
I
like
do
what
too.
He's done.
Listen, a great, great person and a real strong, leader. He's a great man. I mean, the guy is a great football player, great leader, has been a high character go-to guy for that for a franchise where they take great pride in their culture. He's been a pillar of that culture, and but I have to say false to that too. Listen, I know what it's like to get old playing professional football, and his mind may be there, but his body is not going to follow, and I it's going to be very difficult for him to bounce back week to week. In the grind of an NFL schedule. So I say false as well.
Finally, and I have a feeling I'm going to go 3-for-3 on the true false here today. NFL true or false, Danny Amendola, now with the Baltimore or with the Miami Dolphins, been there for a couple of months. Adam Gase, in an interview, said, I don't think you can put a price on what Danny Amendola has made. He's great in our locker room. The guys watch him work on the field in the weight room. They understand why he's played as long as he has, why he's had success in big situations. Adam Gase, Dolphins head coach, thinks Amendola is making the Dolphins better, even though he hasn't played yet. A great example for other guys in their locker room. He's making guys better. Amendola's work ethic, making the Dolphins better, true, false? You want to go first?
Yeah, I say false. I think it's coach speak. I don't think there's any doubt Danny Amendola is working hard.
Yeah.
But to say that he's going to change the culture as a 32-year-old slot receiver from another team, certainly coming from the Patriots, maybe the Dolphins are looking sideways at him saying, okay, how are you doing it? What's your deal? You know, how they do it up there? Maybe they're getting some of that, but I don't think that he came in there and all of a sudden transformed the atmosphere of that locker room because he works hard.
I think Gase, who I'm not impressed with, I told you this, I used to tell Donald
really?
Not at all, Steve,
really?
Not at all. I think he's a play caller. He's an offensive play caller. Stands on the sidelines as the head coach, looks at his play sheet, he barely engages in the game other than to send a play in. And so I don't like that about him. I think what they've done this offseason, this is not just Gase, they've got rid of a lot of talent, brought in guys like Amendola in an effort to improve the culture. And this guy, as you said, it's coach speak for him to say that Amendola's work ethic is making him better because that's what he wants the narrative to be. Look, we brought in hard workers. We're changing the culture. Look at Danny Amendola. He's been here 2 months. Look at our culture has changed already. Baloney, false.
Yeah.
Right, two months of offseason work does not change the culture, does not make the Dolphins better.
I agree with that, but I'll tell you what, I do like Gase a little bit more than you do. I've been down there and watched him. I'll tell you the thing that struck me about him, he acts like a really young guy. He's got a lot of energy. I think he connects with his players. I think they respond to him. I don't think there's any question. You're right. He is a good play caller. And I think that's one of the reasons why Ryan Tannehill could bounce back this year and they could be much better with him under center. I think he made a mistake bringing Jay Cutler in last year, although their backs were against the wall. They had to do something, and Jay Cutler was probably their best option. I thought he was a mistake. And he is Jay Cutler is kind of the opposite type of guy you want to bring in. I would much rather have had them bring in a team-oriented, us for us before me kind of guy rather than Jay Cutler is not that. And so I think maybe it was a, you know, maybe backed into a corner to make that decision. But I am a little higher on Adam Gase than you are because I do think he connects with those young players. I think he's got a lot of energy, and he is a good play caller. And
play caller. He should be offensive coordinator. Yeah,
but I do think, and I agree with you, I think they've got a plan down there, and it does include letting guys who are overpriced go, like Jarvis Landry and Ndamukong Suh.
All right, we'll break. We're back with more. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. We're coming to you from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Hey, what do we learn from today's show? It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of your Buffalo Bills. What do we learn? A couple of good guests today. Steve Weitz from NFL.com and NFL Network joined us talking about how don't overlook A.J. McCarron. He thinks he could wind up as the Bills starter at quarterback.
McCarron's a young guy who really hasn't had that break, and I think he's going to compete like hell. I think he's really going to be a good leader in that locker room, but I think the competitive edge he's going to have will at least let him start the season. And I think the Bills have a good enough team to win plenty of games with him as the starter, which could make the transition to Josh Allen tough, which is why I think if Josh Allen's going to get playing time this year, he's got to get it out of the gate. I just think McCarron, he's a very capable quarterback who, again, hasn't had that opportunity. He's going to compete like hell to win that job. I think he's got a good opportunity to win it and to hold on to it for a little bit.
Steve Weitz from NFL Network talking about A.J. McCarron. Also on the show today, Judy Batista from NFL.com. She's going to be covering the owners' meetings in Atlanta starting early next week. Main thing on the agenda, rules changes. We've talked about it all day, in particular the change on the kickoff rule. Here's what Judy Batista says about that.
If they don't see a marked decline in the number of head injuries suffered on kickoff, they're going to go back to the drawing board, and eventually that could lead to getting rid of the kickoff entirely. So I think they all went into that meeting understanding there need to be substantive changes to the kickoff. And the ones that are going to be voted on and that I expect to be improved are pretty big ones, right? I mean, there's not going to be any wedges allowed anymore. You were allowed to have a two-man wedge. That's going to completely be gone. And there's not going to be any running start for the kicking team, right? I mean, old school, you used to see the running start. And there won't be any of that. And the whole idea here is to have more space on the play and less speed, because those are the two things that combine for those huge head-on collisions.
Judy Batista, we thank her, and Steve Weitz. I heard you and I didn't hear you. We weren't doing the show. You and Lorenzo talking the other day, and you believe, don't let me put words in your mouth, that to the average fan, kickoffs won't look that much different once these rules.
No, I think the results are what's going to change. I think I think when the ball doesn't reach the end zone, there's going to be a good chance for a couple of big returns, I think, because they did take away one of the main even while they took away one of the main weapons of the return, I think you're going to be able to find teams manning up, and there's going to be some guys that make mistakes on coverage, plus the fact they're coming from a running start. That's the one thing I think that really is going to be noticeable to fans. When the ball's kicked, that's the first time anybody can run, and so it'll look a little bit different. But I think there's a chance that we might see some pretty good returns this year.
Hope so. We talked and heard a lot of folks, good ideas from callers about rules changes. What appeals to you? What if you could change one rule in the NFL?
One of the callers called in, and I can't remember who it was, but I think when an offense is backed up and they get a holding call on their own 4-yard line, I think instead of moving them back half the distance to the goal, I think the caller said, let's move the sticks out 10 yards or out 5 yards, whatever the commensurate yardage is. So instead of not giving up anything for getting a penalty called, the sticks move away from them. And so they don't, and they get the repeat down so that if every time they do, it'll get worse and worse if they continue to get penalties. Because what happens is you get a holding call on a play down deep in your own end on your 1 yard line, you can keep getting penalties and you're not only losing, but you still have the same, you know, down and distance to try and pick it up.
My rule change is simple. Eliminate the use of instant replay in officiating the game. All I want, Steve, all I want is to go in a non-voting basis, go to the owners' meetings, and make my case. I think I would convince a few people. Just get rid of replay. You look at me like I'm nuts.
You wouldn't convince anybody.
Oh, give me a chance. Just give me one chance. I could turn a few ideas around, I think.
All right.
All right. Want to thank our production assistants.
We'll bounce back to this topic.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
almost positive.
George Blass, Jeff Koltenick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood, J.J. Torito, James Roble, and Kevin Cargis, our producer, Jay Harris. Have a great weekend, everybody. You too, Steve.
Yeah,
we'll
man.
See you back here Monday at noon with One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.